Tony Wild Turkey.
Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will come to order. Welcome, everyone. We do have a quorum present and plenty of work to do, so let's get started right away. I do want to make one announcement, though, before we get into Senator Chaudhry's bill. Members, this is for you. We are being asked by leadership to, and the House and Senate have agreed to create informal working groups as part of the Conference Committee on the Deficit Reduction Finance Bill. And so I will be having a working group or chairing a working group along with presumably Representative Wagenius and Hilty. And we will have five members. And we'll just be going through items in the finance bill that are related to our budget jurisdiction and what came out of our budget bill and, comparing with the House's bill and trying to discuss some of those differences, resolve them, and take some public testimony on the conference committee issues. Mostly I just want to ask members, for those who are interested in participating, please let me know or Don Jarofsky know if you're interested in being part of that working group. And secondly, you don't have to do that right now, but yeah. And we'll have to try to figure out, you know, how to have a nice balanced group to the best of our ability. That's all we can do is. But I also wanted to alert you that as of now, it looks most likely that we'll be meeting possibly Thursday afternoon, but likely Friday, because it's really the only time we have available. So for members from Greater Minnesota, if that's a problem, keep that in mind when you volunteer, that you'll have to be here on Friday, because it looks like that's the only day this week that we can meet. But we certainly want to have representation from across the state. So so please let us know later your thoughts on that. Great. Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Where we left off was discussion of an amendment that I offered regarding ballast water. Not sure procedurally how that works. Do I need to reoffer there, or do I have to withdraw that amendment?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I think what you'd want to do is withdraw the A7 amendment, because that's where the committee left off last time, and then offer the A19 amendment to replace that.
Withdraw the A7 and the A19, which is a revision of that amendment.
All right. We'll get that passed out. Thank you. All right, Senator Chaudhry, would you like to explain the differences or what the A19 amendment does?
I've got Senator Rest with me. She'll go through it with us.
All right, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A19 amendment also backs off from the A7 amendment in two ways. One, since we had shrunk proposal from the originally introduced language, we also needed to back off from some of the definitions, because the definitions that were in the A7 amendment were not applicable to the rest of the amendment. And so we took those out of there at the suggestion of some of our critics and are just using in the A19 amendment definitions that speak to the A19 amendment. Also, it was pointed out to us that some foreign vessels that come into our waters, maybe even only once in the lifetime of that ship and or otherwise infrequently, may have records on board, but they would not be written in English. And that would be an undue burden. And so on page 3, paragraph B, we allow the commissioner to prescribe alternative time periods. Maybe they only do it once in the lifetime again of the ship for record retention and for foreign vessels, and also that are consistent with international standards. So the commissioner is given a great deal of flexibility with regard to the keeping a ballast water record book. So we tried to be sensitive to that. I don't know whether members have the permit language that the PCA is now going to be embarking on with regard to ballast water. I don't know if they sent it to everyone on this committee, but it's certainly available. They're having two meetings. One of them is this afternoon. I'll be attending over in the boardroom in St. Paul to start going through their process. I would maintain, however, that even as seemingly detailed as their proposal is here, that having some backup, some general language backup in the statutes is something that we should embark upon that does not get into the specifics, particularly the scientific specifics that the PCA is going to be going through in its permitting process. There's nothing in the language of the bill that interferes with that permitting process. It is simply language that would be supportive of it. And in particular, there's, even though it talks about local laws and rules, it does talk about that the PCA can't go beyond what's authorized in statute. And it seems to me that we ought to at least have a beginning framework for the PCA to move forward, and it does no damage to any of their plans, and certainly is, in my mind at least, is no threat to the current practices that are undertaken by both Lakers and Salties, and we should not think that the free world is going to come to an end by having some language that addresses the issues of ballast water on Minnesota waters of Lake Superior.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pariseau.
Madam Chair, Senator Rest or whoever might speak to it, is this language in any way going to compromise the language that is already standardized, possibly at a national level or international level?
Madam Rest. Chair and
or
Senator.
Practices, I should say, instead
Senator
of language.
Senator Pariseau, not to my knowledge, and as I indicated, it in no way does anything other than to support what the PCA is moving forward with. And as a matter of fact, this amendment is silent on things like setting standards and the permitting language, although if you read any of it to begin with, they talk about it being there's going to be putting forth the draft, and then there'll be comment period, and certainly during that comment period, after that comment period, they can decide to make changes in it. One of the things that they are proposing standards, either the IMO, the International Maritime Organization standards, are those that are being proposed in federal draft legislation. So there is nothing here that sets a standard. It just says that there ought to be a plan, that the ships ought to have a plan that is approved by the commissioner, and that they should have a keep a record of their ballast water discharges.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Questions? Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, to Senator Rest, to Senator Pariseau's question is, are the reporting requirements or the documentation they have to require to keep on board any different than are required under federal law?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Senator Rest.
As I understand it, it would support the PCA's approach, which is either what the Coast Guard is currently requiring and or the IMO. And I can't tell you about, I can't describe, maybe nobody here other than a very few people from the PCA could tell you what exactly are the specifics of those standards. But I don't believe the language does that, Senator Bach.
Senator Ress, I assume you've discussed this new language with PCA. Have they seen it? And do they have, we just want to know if there's any fiscal impact that they're projecting from this new language.
Madam Chair, they could certainly speak to fiscal impact, but the PCA is officially neutral on the language of the bill that we had before. So this is a withdrawal from that. So I can't imagine that they're opposed to.
Well, we should probably just get for the record clarity on whether there's any fiscal impact on the bill. You don't have to testify as to any more than neutrality. You don't have to add to that unless you want to. But welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul Ager, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And Senator Rest is correct. There is no fiscal impact. This is work that we're currently doing in support of our working draft of the permit, which actually, as Senator Rest mentioned, we have a public meeting on later this afternoon. So there's no fiscal impact in the language.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Is it? Can you spell your last name?
Ager, E-G-E-R.
Okay. I thought you said anchor, and I thought, no. I'm just imagining things. Thank you so much. Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, I do have a one-word amendment, a deletion of one word. Page 2, line 30, delete unmanned and insert without a crew. It's merely to make the language gender neutral.
Good for you, Senator Fredrickson. That's a good improvement. Yeah, we did that to all our statutes at one point, didn't we? Senator Ress.
Madam Chair, I was the author of that bill in the House. So.
Let's vote on Senator Fredrickson's amendment to the amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. All right. Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, is anybody from the Port of Duluth here? I just want to make sure that they're okay with this so that we don't end up inadvertently sending some ship traffic to Wisconsin without knowing that. Can't imagine we do, but I'd like to know what the Port of Duluth thinks if they're here.
I don't know who represents them. Anyone here who'd like to speak on behalf of the port? Have you talked with them, Senator Rest?
Certainly not recently, Madam Chair. And again, this is much more modest than we had originally proposed. And it doesn't mean that people aren't still opposed to it, and I certainly would welcome you hearing testimony back and forth, although I know it was not your intent to have testimony, since this is something that's being added that was heard in the other committee. It seems to me that it's reasonable if that's what you need to do.
Senator Rest, I don't intend to take testimony as a general rule. But if there is some specific comment on the changes, you know, on the language as amended, it is a little bit different, and that would be helpful if there's – but I don't want to open it up unless there's questions from committee members. I would guess that the port – I mean, obviously, there was a hearing on this – when was that, a week ago? And we're back again, so they're certainly aware, I'm imagining, that this is happening.
Madam Chair, I believe there is somebody
Senator
here
Parasol.
Who would like to comment on the question.
Yeah. And who is that?
Mr. Pagel.
Mr. Pagel, who wanted to testify before. Well, we did have testimony from the mining industry, I believe, in Senator Chaudhry's committee. So I'm wondering if you have something new to say about this that you didn't say in Senator Chaudhry's committee. And I didn't quite say yes. The problem is if I say yes to you, can everyone else
like
who would want to testify raise your hand?
I'd like to hear from
if I let Mr. Pagel testify. Okay, we'll
we
take
have one
you
supporter testifier, if that is if that's appropriate.
All right, we're going to give you guys 2 minutes each, Senator Saxhog.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And I talk a little bit to the process because, as you say, we took a lot of testimony in Senator Chaudhry's committee. It didn't come out in the omnibus bill. We have now heard two different versions in this committee, and I guess I think people ought to be able to comment on each one of those changes briefly. So.
Absolutely. I think we'd like the testimony to be focused on the changes, however, and how that changes their opinion. That would be the focus of the testimony. Mr. Pagel, come on up.
Madam Chair, Tony Quillis, representing the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Senator Rest just made a quick reference to it, and I'm holding in front of you right now the permit that the Pollution Control Agency is going to take public comment on in about an hour. They've already sent out one draft permit. We've had a public meeting on March 3rd and 4th. Again, we're going to have this permit that we got late Friday afternoon. There are some questions that we have about this, as well as the amendment that Senator Rest is proposing. We'd like to, you know, kind of vet that out a little bit more in public. To scare everybody, talk about a stakeholders group again, Senator Anderson. I don't know how many times we've said that, but we've had a couple of stakeholder group meetings. I think there's a number of questions to be asked by the mining industry, agricultural, taconite, timber. So we'd like to kind of vet those out and see how it goes. Also be able to get over and testify it to at the PCA board. So I just wanted to point those comments out to you into the record and give my time up to Mr. Pape.
Thank you, Mr. Quillis. Any questions for Mr. Quillis? Okay.
Senator, I appreciate this because I was missing the last time. I was captive in another committee with a bill that I had to stay there
for. I know. I missed a lot of
so I missed this bill last
week. A lot as well, and it's frustrating that we have to be in two or three places at one time.
Thank you.
Mr. Pagel.
Hi, my name is Craig Pagel. I'm the president of the Iron Mining Association of Minnesota. Just a real quick, small bit. The Iron Mining Association represents the six mines and about 200 vendors. Basically 3,000 miners, between 12 and 14,000 other employees. We had about $100 million in taxes every year to the state's coffers, about $1.6 billion to the state. And the steel industry alone, that 80% of the taconite, that the iron ore that comes out that goes to the United States, is about a $350 billion industry. It affects just about everything we do in any manufacturing in the United States. Specifically to the bill, my concern is, or the language to the bill, is there are some things in here that haven't been heard of, haven't been well thought out. In fact, I appreciate that it's been shortened. Some of the concerns I had was included. However, if I could point out a couple of them, as Senator Rest noted, there's probably people in here that don't have the knowledge about specific parts of it. The biggest concern I have, one of the biggest concerns, is on 2.33, talked about the retention of the book. The question was asked whether the International Maritime Organization or other federal already have rules. They do. The retention period is 2 years. Must be kept on board, signed either by the captain or the operating officer. I got that information just this morning from the Lake Carriers Association.
So, Mr. Pagel, I'm just going to follow up on that point before you get to the next one. I guess I'm, if it's, this doesn't counter, you know, contradict that other policy. It's just a little bit longer than the other one. It sounds like I'm wondering why keeping a book on board a ship for an extra year is going to somehow jeopardize $100 million in taxes. I mean, what is that a big problem? Tell us why that's a problem.
Get to that. That's the direction I was going. I appreciate it. Madam Chair and Senators, it also goes further and says how it must be recorded and where it must go. One of the concerns I have on that is you will require ships to have more than one type of recording records. Some of these ships will be coming in that do not know our specific rules. That's why the International Maritime Organization has rules that they've worked through. But it says here you must do it. So Minnesota is setting itself up to have specific rules that are only to Minnesota if this would go through. But more importantly, if we're in the rulemaking process, we have now tweaked that rulemaking process if this becomes law. I would like to leave it open to those people that have worked on this and have been working on it for years and that there's already agreements. That is one point. The other point would be that they're adding language of who all has to sign off on it. Even though it's done electronically, some of these owners might live on the other side of the world. It wouldn't be just the Lakers. We're talking the Salties and others. And I know that they've addressed some of it. I haven't, it's the first I've seen of the amendment.
Which is, can you point to the part you just said about signing
sure.
off? Where's that language?
See, I believe it's on 3.6.
Okay.
The owner-operator of the vessel. That's different than the, it's different than the captain or the people that are on the boat. My point is that we're adding stuff that's now in the middle of rulemaking that's going to sway where those decisions come in. I would hope that we'd be able to take a look at, not make any mistakes here so that we do the right thing. And as an example, 3.16, that's section 4, is it talks about the Commissioner of Natural Resources shall cooperate to the fullest extent practicable. That's under 115, which is usually the PCA statutes. I believe that it's in the 80s that the DNR corrected because I don't work with them.
Madam Chair, I can respond.
Senator Rest.
First of all, the PCA process is not rulemaking. They are acting under their administrative authority, and that's a very, very different process. So they're not going through rulemaking and dealing with this. They're acting under their administrative authority. Secondly, the sections on consultation and cooperation. Minnesota operates a little bit differently than some other states with regard to who has responsibility and authority in dealing with invasive species issues and policy. In Minnesota, three agencies work on invasive species and the vectors in which they are introduced into Minnesota's environment, the Department of Agriculture, the DNR, and the PCA. The DNR currently is the Minnesota representative on the Great Lakes Panel on Aquatic Nuisance Species, but it is the PCA here in Minnesota that is going to be working on this permit process. And so the DNR is, we're not supplanting the DNR as the Minnesota representative. We're just merely suggesting that the commissioner of the PCA would serve as the alternate to the DNR commissioner on the Great Lakes Panel on Aquatic Nuisance Species. So Minnesota does have a three-prong approach to invasive species policy. In other states, it's sometimes only a single agency, but we do it differently. We're not trying to upset that apple cart or to take over anything from the Department of Agriculture or the DNR's representation on this Great Lakes panel.
Is the DNR neutral on this bill as well, as far as you know?
As far as I know.
I don't see. Maybe Bob Meyer left. Okay, I see someone nodding. Thank you. All right. Are there questions for Mr. Pagel? All right. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Madam Chair, I did have a testifier that would speak to the changes that were made here in favor of it, if you would permit that.
Yes. Is that Mr. Botsick?
Yes.
Okay. Very briefly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. Gary Botsick, and I can speak for Minnesota Conservation Federation and the National Wildlife Federation today. Both our organizations are members of what's called the Healthy Lakes, Healthy Lives effort, which is a regional effort working in Congress right now to pass some of these national legislation that we know is necessary. And I have a lot of respect for Mr. Quillis and Mr. Pagel and Senator Bach for your comments about the economic importance of the Great Lakes. But I do want to just, for the record, Madam Chair, insert the some of the other aspects of the Great Lakes. As we know, they comprise one-fifth of the Earth's fresh water supply. They also provide drinking water for 42 million people. And they also support a $4.5 billion sports fishery and are the backbone of the outdoor recreational industry that generates $6.5 billion from fishing and another almost $5 billion from hunting. That's why we support these changes, Madam Chair. What we're really talking about is invasive species. And since the mid-50s, when the Great Lakes opened up through the St. Lawrence Seaway, 180 exotic non-native invasive species have entered the Great Lakes at a rate of about two a year or one every 26 weeks. And we just need to do a better job. This Senate passed a resolution last session memorializing Congress and the federal government to sort of get off the couch or get off the bench and do something. And they really haven't done that much. I've got no less than nine federal bills that are pending, everything from appropriation bills for research to additional work on ballast water, et cetera. This would just send another message. I don't think this hurts the PCA's efforts. I think that permitting process that is being public hearing eyes today is a good step in the right direction, and I think this doesn't do anything to short-circuit that process, and I applaud the PCA for moving forward, and I would encourage the legislature to move forward with this piece of legislation as well.
Thank you, Mr. Botsick. Questions? All right. Thank you very much. And I guess, members, it is important for us also to think about, when we're talking about the economic costs and benefits in comparison with each other, also the cost to our state of the agencies that we cover in this budget if we don't take an action on invasive species. That will be a very costly problem for us to solve. So that's a – I guess we haven't heard direct testimony on that issue, but it's something to keep in mind. All right. Members, are we ready to vote on this amendment? Any other discussion? Hearing none. Senator Chaudhry moves passage of the 819 amendment as amended. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I've got the A14.
Which? Construction demolition for
recipe.
Right.
Landfills. Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, this is a Peace in the Valley amendment regarding Senator Metzen's bill that we heard in our committee regarding the disposal of drywall waste and gypsum. And this is an amendment that both sides of the debate have agreed on and is supported by Senator Metzen as well, so I've agreed to offer it. Basically, it says that the gypsum will be mixed in with the dirt on a one-to-one basis.
All right. Senator Chaudhry, I appreciate that there's been a compromise here that makes our lives a little easier.
Yep.
Any discussion from the committee? All right. Hearing none. And this, again, is an issue that was discussed at great length in the policy committee. On the A14 amendment, all in favor say aye. I'm sorry. Has everyone – let me make sure everyone's had a chance to at least see it out in the advocates in the room. All right. Now we'll vote. On the 814 amendment, if there's no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson's been waiting anxiously for us to offer up her amendment. This is the 08-6068. It's basically Senate File 3243, the walleye stocking on Leech Lake that was heard in my committee and this committee as well. And she's asked me to offer an amendment to put it onto this omnibus bill, and I think it's a good idea too.
Members, this should be in your folders. This bill left over from the last committee hearing. So if you can't find it, just raise your hand, and we'll get you a copy. And Senator Chaudhry, I thought we were discussing taking this from the Game and Fish Fund rather than the general fund, which is why.
Oh, okay.
So. I think that would be more. Senator Bach had suggested that. It seemed like an appropriate.
Sure. Can amend that.
A better source of funding, and that's why it's in the policy bill now, not in the finance bill. So,
I'll move to amend the amendment by on line 1.5, deleting general, inserting game and fish.
All right. You can incorporate that. Fine. We'll incorporate that in the amendments. Oh, did he already make that motion when that was discussed? Okay, Senator Chaudhry, another discussion that we had last time, I think, was to change it to up to $25 million.
Okay.
Would you like to incorporate that as well? On line 6, strike with and insert up to.
Okay.
And on 172.
As well as on line 1.7, strike with and insert up to. Does that work?
I think you should leave the word with. Just with up to. Just after with.
Oh, I'm sorry. Don't strike the word with. Okay, let me just insert the word up to on both of those after the word with on lines 1.6 and 1.7. Is that correct?
Okay. So Senator Chaudhry will incorporate those amendments into his amendment. Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, I just want to make sure that Senator Olson knows what she's doing. Because there, if she's successful at this, she will get other requests to do walleye stocking in other lakes in her district. And Senator Olson is...
It was adopted. That was adopted. Okay,
and when they come, I'm just not sure, Madam Chair, where the department's going to get all the fry. When, you know, we raise a certain number and there's some raised privately, but they do have to be available for the department to be able to be successful in carrying out. That was my reason for wanting up too, is I don't know if they can, if there's 25 million out there for them to even purchase, but I would like to hear from the department, I think, about the availability of fry, if this is something they even could accomplish if we did that.
Okay, that's fine. We can hear answer to that. Senator Olson?
And, Madam Chair, I'm sure the DNR can speak to this more specifically, but I know that there was that this issue was raised in the other body, and my understanding is that the availability of the fish wasn't really the issue. But I guess I'll defer to the DNR to testify to that.
All right. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Ron Pyer with DNR Fish and Wildlife. Madam Chair, Senator Bach, in terms of the 25 million fry for Leech Lake, we believe that those would be available. We use the Woman Lake Run. Beyond that, we stock about 280 million fry a year in the various lakes around the state. So there is some capacity issues there, but we believe from a capacity standpoint, we could achieve this.
It's all over my floor. Senator Hahn, on this testimony?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I recall the testimony we had earlier on this when we had the bill. And I'd like to ask the DNR, and to Senator Bach's point, that by doing this, we kind of are suggesting that it's appropriate for the legislature to make a determination of where walleye stocking activities should take place. And I'm just wondering, if we do that, do we run the risk of turning the whole fishery stocking program into something that is driven by individual members and desires to try to help particular lakes and take it out of the... What I've understood, and I may be wrong, is that this has been something that the department has tried to administer in a way that is sort of non-political and based on things that are, I guess, standard practice. And I just wondered if the DNR would have any comment on, does this represent a change in sort of policy direction that might not be appropriate to pursue generally? But any thoughts on that?
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, the agency's concerns with mandating stocking in a situation like this, we do have some concerns with continuing to aggressively stock and suppression of natural year class production. And we don't believe at this point in time that in the case of Leech Lake that it's broken necessarily. All the population parameters look very good on Leech Lake. We believe natural reproduction could express itself. The community has gone through a series of years where the fishing has been very slow, and they're just concerned. They don't want to take the risk of having another year class that isn't strong. So our intent was, as I've mentioned in previous testimony, is to work with the community, Leech Lake area stakeholders and statewide stakeholders, to develop a management plan for Leech Lake. We'll have more information this summer. We would develop that plan over the winter, and it would include triggers for stocking if we feel that the community feels that here are the triggers that are met, and stocking is what's necessary to sustain lake like Leech Lake, we would do that. So this does mandate some stocking strategies that at least our managers and biologists have some concerns with.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I guess I didn't know that we were going to be going into a bigger discussion of the policy behind this bill because it has been passed through two previous committees. So I apologize that I don't have testifiers here to kind of respond to what was just said. But I would like to say, in response to Senator Bach and Senator Hand's comments, that I think even the DNR would acknowledge that the situation at Leech Lake really is unique in terms of the situation that developed there between the DNR and the community and the long-term problem that has been ongoing there for probably about 10 years. It isn't simply a desire of the community to do something because solely for economic reasons, but as you heard from earlier testimony, there really has been some disagreement about the biology of things there. We had a biologist testify. There's a very organized, a couple of organized groups in that community that have been involved and very proactive with this with this activity. And I can assure this community that at least on behalf of my district, it is not my intent to come back here with similar requests on behalf of other lakes. I look at this as a very isolated incident, and I met yesterday with the DNR for over an hour. I'm very grateful to them that they offered to take the time to sit down and that they are looking at developing a task force and allowing for more community input going forward into this issue. And they're looking at perhaps even putting some language together, but they're not there yet. So I guess with that, I just would like to assure the committee that I don't view this as a pattern.
Thank you, Senator Olson. And we certainly don't want to rehash the whole debate. So we're just going to respond to questions. Senator Saxog had his hand.
I'm okay.
Okay, Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, there's a very substantial hatchery on Pike River on Lake Vermilion, where a large percentage of the walleye fry that the department raises. And I hear criticism all the time on Lake Vermilion that the reason fishing is poor is because the DNR takes all the fish out of this lake. You know, the overwhelming majority of the fish on Vermilion spawn in Pike River. The DNR traps them, and they milk them. They take the eggs and milk them, and they basically take most of the fish out of the lake and put it other places. And anything we do that causes them to have to reach even further and have even less spawn available for Vermilion is a problem. But now that I got that off my chest, my people in Torres Sedan will be happy. But I wonder, Senator Olson, if, I mean, we know what your intent is, but just so that we don't get a flurry of other stocking bills, if we shouldn't just on line 1.4 delete on Leech Lake, and on line 1.6 delete Leech Lake, we've just got a walleye stocking. We're telling the department put 25 million more fry in Minnesota lakes, and I think Senator Olson, the intent is pretty clear to the department what you and I think some members of the committee would like to have done with those 25 million fry, but I think Senator Hahn is right. I don't know that we should start on an individual lake basis telling the department that a lake needs stocking, depending on what active a local lake association is and how effective they are communicating to their legislators. I mean, I'm concerned about increased walleye stocking just because I know where it comes from. There's a very small number of lakes that the walleyes come off to go into these other lakes, but at least if we weren't lake-specific, I think that would probably make it easier for some of us that have walleye lakes in the future that we would be able to resist the temptation to introduce a bill to stock more walleyes in lakes that we represent.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, again, I'm apologize because I feel somewhat at a disadvantage without having someone here from my district to be able to be more provide more information to the committee about this issue. But I'm sure that, you know, that the DNR can correct me if I misstate this, but my understanding is not that this is, there's a finite number of fry to stock. And so adding 25 million to lakes in general not only won't accomplish the purpose of my bill, but I'm not sure it's even feasible, because whatever the fry are that are going to be stocked, those are the fry that are going to be stocked. And it's not, it's, it becomes a lot more complicated than just looking at, for example, the fish have to be genetically similar. So I don't think that fish would come from Lake Vermilion to be stocked in Leech Lake. I think they come from Winnie, if I'm, or yeah, I mean, there's our Woman Lake, because that's kind of the mother lake for that area that has a similar strain. And so there were some very specific issues in Walker. They had an influx of cormorants that was unprecedented anywhere else around the state, and they have an issue with rusty crayfish that are an invasive species that they don't have a solution for controlling that. And there's an interplay of a lot of different dynamics there that have had a very, so this is a very specific and unique problem that has in the last several years caused over 30 businesses to go out of business in that community, and there were some very specific ties to the walleye population on that lake in terms of the reason for that. The DNR initially did not want to stock the lake, and so there's a long history. Again, I apologize for taking additional time. But there are still some unanswered questions about Leech Lake, and the science question was really whether the DNR, not knowing yet what the problem is, should be pulling back from stocking until a few more studies are completed and some more answers are out there, because of how much the community has already suffered economically, and because there are, again, the earlier testimony that you heard, there are still some concerns about the ability of the lake to naturally reproduce and some disagreements there. And so I really believe this is a very unique circumstance, and I don't think it's taking fish per se away from other lakes, or that these fish or that the fry aren't available. But I do think that there will in the future be kind of the result of all of this is going to be a closer communication and working relationship between the DNR in that area and the community. It wasn't the Lake Association I'm referring to, Senator Bach. There were specific task force formed in this community specifically around this issue. So anyway, thanks for your patience.
Senator Saxhock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, speaking to what Senator Bach's point, I'm somewhat concerned here that even though this is a very specific case, that we're talking about managing our fishery by law rather than rule. And consequently, you know, we're telling the DNR where to put the fish. We've got another section in here which talks about limits. And right now, limits are in rule, and the DNR can manage by limit however they feel is correct. We're going to put it into law. So, you know, I have some real question whether this is the proper way to be going about stocking.
Okay. Senator Olson, someone did raise their hand, but I don't, I think you're, but I don't, I'm not, I'm not inviting any testimony. I just wanted you to know that they're here and volunteering. I think you're doing a very good job of explaining your position. So I don't, I really don't think we need more testimony. I think everyone understands the issue quite well. We've heard a lot about this, and I'm just, we're just taking, answering questions at this point.
Madam
Senator
Chair.
Bickerman.
Are we on Senator Bach's amendment, or where are we?
We're
at?
On Senator Chaudhry's amendment for Senator Olson. Oh, one more thing.
Senator amendment.
Well, Senator Chaudhry is moving the amendment.
To the lakes, or didn't we do that?
No, he didn't move an amendment.
Well, then, Madam Chair, I'd like to take Leech and put Lake Chautauqua.
Uh-oh. Oh, there goes that slippery slope. We're sliding down it. Senator Chaudhry, the other suggestion is that it should be one time. We should maybe comment, put a, some wording in here that makes it clear this is a one-time appropriation.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think if you on line 1.7 after the period, just insert, this is a one-time appropriation.
Fine, Madam Chair. And Mr. Pyre actually has a fiscal issue to raise.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Pyor.
If I could, just to reiterate, in order to stock the 25 million a year, the amendment would be up to, would cost about $135,000. So again, it's about $2.50 for every 1,000 fry. So the 35,000 would allow the stocking of about 14 million fry, and I just want to bring that point up.
Well, I know we discussed that before.
That's why
and
we
that's
put
why
the
amendment was made. I mean, Senator, you could change it to 14,000. That might be a little more accurate. Say up to, 14 million, excuse me. That might fit the money a little bit better. Perhaps that would be.
We did the, Madam Chair, we did the up to.
Yes, that's the purpose of putting that in there, because we're well aware it's not enough money. Senator Olson, briefly.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess, this is how the committee process works. Sometimes things come up in one committee that are different in another committee. I guess I'd just like to remind the committee members, though, who already voted in support of this, the reasons for it when the witnesses were actually here and testified. We had about 10 people from the Walker community come down here and talk about the impact this has had on the storefronts, their economy, the like $20 million worth of loss to that small community of a very few people, the not just the resorts, but the fishing businesses and all the retail businesses that are dependent. And then the long history, as I said, of what had gone on with the DNR and the community. And I hate to go down that road again, because I don't want to create an adversarial or situation as far as I said, I appreciate the DNR's willingness to come and talk about trying to make things better in the future. But there is a very unique and specific history here, and this is extremely significant to this community. So I just would like to encourage you to remember the reasons why you voted to support this when it was heard in the two previous committees. Thank you.
Senator Vickerman, were you making a motion? You're thinking about it.
I'm still thinking.
You're making a point, definitely. Yeah.
Well, Madam Chair, I sympathize with the senator, but I hear that down where I, in my lake, down the southern part of Minnesota, they don't stock it, they do some. I think we ought to, I think this bill needs a little bit more study. That's my personal opinion. Pretty hard for me to vote for it just the way it sets now, but if we could maybe table it and get a little bit more research. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just, it's up to you. You could say that about, is there 10,000 lakes? I'll bet you 999 of them would like more fish stuff.
I don't think we could fit 25 million in Como Lake, so I don't, I'm not going to ask, try to do that. All right. Senator Torres Ray had your hand up first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am wondering if this will be really an opportunity for us to look into this issue and perhaps amend this amendment to give the DNR a mandate to look at the different lakes, perhaps starting with Leech Lake, and review a process to really work on this stock process for walleye. And so that this language could be the beginning of that, since Senator Vickerman, Senator Back, and others in all districts in the state of Minnesota may be interested in this, that this would be the beginning of that process rather than just saying completely no, when we know that this is really an area where we have to really take some action. And so that this could be the beginning of that process. I would like to offer that idea, just because I think that there is a problem. I wasn't part of the discussion in the policy committee, but if this is a problem, rather than just postponing this, I think we should start looking into it, and DNR should be providing recommendations to us as to how do we deal with this problem.
Well, there was a lot of testimony on this in the policy committee, and it is rather difficult to try to redo that now without having everybody on all sides being here. All right, I've seen there's way too many hands up. I can't count on you all at once.
Are we through with this amendment? Did we complete this amendment?
Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, I was just going to say that the Policy Committee did vote for this unanimously on a voice vote, and I think if there are concerns about it with certain members on this committee, vote no. I think it's a good idea to have this amendment on the bill, and I intend to vote for it. But you know, let's vote. We don't need to do the policy work again.
I'm inclined to agree with you, Senator Chaudhry. We really can't spend a lot more time debating this. I mean, Senator Torres Ray, you don't have an amendment to offer, I presume. So your idea may have merit, but we need something in front of us. We need to make a decision here.
Madam Chair, I'll move on line 1.4 to delete on Leech Lake, and on line 1.6, delete Leech Lake.
And then, Senator Buck, what would this bill do?
It would require the DNR to stock up to 25 million new walleye fry in 9 and in 10. And it takes out the lake specific.
It doesn't say new, and stocking.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Knopf.
I think it might read better to strike the width, as the Chair wanted to do earlier, on both 1.6 and 1.7. And you also may want to, before walleye, insert additional, because they do a lot of walleye fry stocking right now. In both places, so it would read $35,000 is appropriated from the Game and Fish Fund in fiscal year 2009 and the Commissioner of Natural Resources to stock up to 25,000 additional walleye fry in calendar year and so on.
A million,
excuse me. Million. Good point, zeros.
I have to listen. Okay.
That's my motion, Madam Chair.
Pardon me? Okay, you'll incorporate those suggestions.
Yes.
All right, we've got Senator Bach's motion. That was a motion?
Yes.
Senator Fredrickson.
Well, Madam Chair, I understand what Senator Bach is saying about not being lake-specific, but I'm not sure what this says if we're telling the Department to stock up to 25 million additional walleye fry. We've already heard some testimony that they're going to stock 280 million anyway. Would that mean that they're going to be required to stock 305 million this next year?
Just more than 280.
Well, I don't know. That's a good question.
Madam Chair, I think it's the additional appropriation to do more stocking, basically, is what you're voting on.
Additional. Yeah. And they said, what they said was, I thought I heard them say we can come up with 25 million more above and beyond that 285 million. Is that what the testimony was?
Yes.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, another alternative for your consideration would be, as I said yesterday, I had this meeting with the DNR. Their suggestion was to change this language to a language that would be specific to the Leech Lake area that would put into statute the task force and require the stocking decisions to be made based on the recommendations of this task force. They haven't gotten back to me yet with that language. So my request to the committee would be if we can move this language forward, I would be very happy to offer an amendment on the floor if we can come to an agreement about that language. And if we can't, you know, certainly Senator Bach could at that time, or anyone always can anyway, move to delete the language if we can't work something out.
Senator Rock? Okay. Commissioner, do you have something new to add to this?
Madam Chair, members, I don't know. I hope so.
So do I.
I hear the struggling going on, and I understand where Senator Olson's coming from. This has been a working relationship with the Leech Lake Walker area. There are task force in place. This is a lake that, as you heard before in previous testimony, has had some struggles. We have been working with this community to try to respond to the needs of cormorant management. We've been harvesting cormorants for the last 3 or 4 years. We've been doing research on rusty crayfish in that lake. We have been stocking the lake. We are committed to stocking 22 million fry in it this year. Our projected management strategy, though, over the last couple years of stocking, where we have stocked 7.5 million, 22 million, 7.5, now 22 again this year, was to take a break, as we do with the majority of our stocking regimes across the state. We're stocking over 900 lakes in the state of Minnesota currently. We're not walking away from Leech Lake. What we're asking for and what we have shared with the community is that we're not looking to stock the lake next year so that we can get an assessment of, is this one of our nation, one of our state's premier walleye lakes recovered or not? And we need that ability to make that assessment, and we can't stock it to make that assessment. If the lake is in need of additional work, additional assistance through stocking, we're committed to doing that in the future. We're not walking away from it. We're not walking away from the storefront businesses on Walker. We're not walking away from the Leech Lake Task Force. We're going to continue to work with them to make sure that this lake is resolved.
Commissioner, let me just ask you then, okay, because I know the DNR's had ample opportunity to express their point of view on this. Are you open to what Senator Olson just suggested, something about letting task force recommendations guide your decision about stocking this year or next year?
Madam Chair, I think the devil's going to be in that detail. Are you going to turn over to the decision-making to a task force, or is that decision-making going to rely within the agency now or within the legislature? Do we work with the task force? There has been a standing task force on the Leech Lake issue for the last 4 years, and we have been working with them. Do we agree on every point? No. Do we try to come to consensus between the biology and the social interests? Absolutely. And we make adjustments to try to marry those two, the fishery science and the social issue and concern, to try to better manage this lake. So we've been doing that. We're going to continue to do that. Do you want to create a statutory formal group to do this? We can put something together, but we wouldn't be looking to transfer over authority over to a task force.
Okay, Senator, Commissioner, with all due respect, I think what I hear you saying is basically reiterating why you don't agree with Senator Olson's bill. Am I correct?
Madam Chair, we have, again, we're stocking over 900 lakes, roughly 200 some odd in a year. To take 25 or commit $25 million in next year's stocking activity, there are lakes that are planned to be stocked that will not be stocked next year.
If this bill passes?
If this bill passes, we will not, there will be 25 million fry going to Leech Lake that is not scheduled to go to Leech Lake next year.
So this...
It will come from somebody else.
So it'll come out of that $285 million, or would it be on top of that?
As this bill, you know, as we talk with our, there's only so much fry that's available in a year. Whether or not we can generate more, if you're asking, can we generate more 25 more million fry?
Mr. Payerson.
That's going to be dependent upon the conditions, the environmental conditions in the spring, and. Staff, do we think we can make 25 more million fry? On a normal year, I think we can do that.
I think your staff, your director testified to that you could just a few minutes ago. So now we're really getting confused here.
Madam Chair, in a normal year, mm-hmm. with the resources, we think we can generate more fry.
I think we're not on back. We don't even we have Senator Bach's motion in front of us, but on Senator Olson's language, I think really, given all the discussion, I think a lot of us were, and the way Mr. Pyer responded, I think a lot of us were assuming this would be $25 million on top of all the other stocking. It would be additional. And so I think not out of the same number of fry that are distributed around the state. And that's a really good, I mean, we need to be clear about that because. It makes a big difference. I don't know if that would affect how people vote on this, but it certainly,
Madam Chair, the point is you're dependent upon the environmental conditions of next spring.
I get that, but
I can't sit here and guarantee you mm-hmm. we're going to generate 25 more million fry over this year.
But, Commissioner, if the bill said that it would be additional walleye above and beyond the normal amount you will stock, if available, then would you be supportive of that?
Madam Chair, in talking with our fisheries folks and the work that we've done, we are looking for a non-stocking year next year. That is the management regime that we have put ourselves on, the commitment that we made this spring of $22 million. When we do our stocking work, that is the mechanism that our biologists assess the lakes. They stock, they step back, they stock, they step back.
Okay.
This lake has been stocked the last 3 years and is going to receive a heavy dose of stocking this spring. We need to have an opportunity to assess the success and the health of that lake. Is it recovered or not?
Okay, thank you. Senator Saxhog.
And Madam Chair, I think what the Commissioner is saying here is that whether you agree or disagree with how the DNR manages our fishery, something as specific as this is managing by law rather than rule. And as Senator Bach was the first one to say it, it's a slippery slope. Because again and again, this is going to come back, and you're going to get somebody like Senator Vickerman from southwestern Minnesota who's got this lake down here that doesn't have any fish in it, and all of a sudden we're going to have another bill in front of us.
Well, Senator Saxhog, I think you're right that that's really the issue in front of us, whether we support that or not. But Commissioner Holston raised a new issue to me, which is this going to take away from other lakes out of existing stock? And I wanted to really clarify that, because I think that was sort of above and beyond the objection that they were raising before and that you're suggesting. All right, members, I hate to do this, but Senator Olson, is there someone you'd like to have testify in support of your bill?
Again, Madam Chair, I thought this we were looking at a procedural thing here. I didn't realize we were going to be going back to
we're
the
trying.
Testimony.
We're
yes,
trying
I understand
not
that.
To, but I saw someone raise his hand who might like to speak in support of it. Do you know this gentleman? And
I don't
Maybe
have anyone
not.
Here from the
okay.
Walker community, so right. I'm not sure what this gentleman was.
I'm from Sand Lake in your district.
Okay.
And part of the Sand Lake Association.
Excuse me.
And
if you're going to speak, you need to come to the table, please, sir. Briefly.
I came to address another issue, and that's the four wall. Right here?
Yep, right here. Make sure it's right here.
Sure.
Just state your name for us, please.
My name is Jim Justison. I'm part of a lake association that works very, very closely with the DNR. We are next year going to be stocking between 1.9 and 2 million fry as part of our lake management plan. Now, we've been on a lake management plan with our headquarters and a person by the name of Chris Cavanaugh up there working, doing great work for the DNR. Many associations have an individual lake plan, and maybe that embraces Senator Olson's concern. Work with the DNR, and people can really put a package and a plan together. Ours includes experimental regulations on Northern Pike because we have problems in that respect. So also with individual lake management plans, the individual people in the associations put in private money fairly frequently. In our case, in the last 3 years, we have put in over $15,000 of private funds to help match up with our lake management plan. So many, many lakes have this. We're on a contingency plan, so we get stocked. And the other thing is, at the end of the year, usually in late September, early October, we electroshock. So we're looking at minnows, we're looking at year class and what's being developed. And I think that's what the commissioner and my friend, Mr. Parr, were talking about. It's a good thing to have, and I think the people in Walker and around Leech can work with the DNR and put together a lake management plan, as Ron Parr had suggested. And it might embrace both private and public funding, as ours does.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Again, I know I'm at a disadvantage here without having someone here from Leech Lake, but actually they have put a ton of local resources into doing exactly that. The disagreement has been with Leech Lake historically, and even the DNR acknowledged this yesterday when we met, there should be a naturally producing good class of walleye every so many years. And the problem in Leech Lake is that apparently there was a local DNR resource manager there, fisheries manager, who felt that Leech Lake should stay a naturally producing lake and that stocking of that lake would not be effective. And so they went without stocking that lake, even though the fishery went downhill for, I can't remember exactly, 12 or 13 years, a long period of time without a good class of walleye fish in that lake. And the DNR did not want to consider the possibility of fishing until a groundswell of community activity forced the stocking to occur there for the first time a few years ago. In fact, the stocking was phenomenally successful. The stocked fish have survived, and you know the DNR has admitted locally that they were incorrect in their assumptions about stocking in Leech Lake. But there's still this history of what happened there, and kind of a And there's still a concern that the fish, and I think as the DNR has said, are not able to naturally produce in that lake for the same reasons that it took down their ability to do that in the first place. They want to work with the DNR, and they do have a lake management plan. But to continue this stocking for simply for two more years to protect the economy of that community until some of these questions are answered was the purpose for bringing this bill forward, and I think the reason why the committee's passed this bill before. Thank you.
May I add one thing?
Very briefly, sir.
And it relates to Mr. Sacktog and Senator Olson. We do stock other things beside fry. And they're called fingerlings and in some cases yearlings, and they jump year classes, and they are larger fish, and the survivability rate is much, much higher.
More expensive.
Last year we paid $17 a pound for fingerlings that were 5 to 7 inches. But it really gives your lake a jump. And again, that's part of a lake management plan supported by and drawn up by the DNR.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate
thank
it.
You. Thank you.
And Senator Olson, I know we really didn't intend to have testimony, so I'm sorry you to feel that you're at a disadvantage. But I think we just need to vote. And let me just make sure everyone understands what's in Senator Bach's motion. Is there any question about what his amendment does or says?
Maybe counsel could tell us.
We'll ask Mr. Knopf to restate it.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach's motion is on 1.4, delete everything after stocking before the period. 1.5, well, we've already had Game and Fish Fund. 1.6, delete Leech Lake with on. And then after 25 million, insert additional. And then on line 1.7, delete with, and after 25 million, add additional.
And then so the amendment should also say this is a one-time appropriation.
I think, Madam Chair, that
would
was incorporated,
be incorporated
by Senator Chaudhry.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's not part of the amendment.
Bach amendment. That's already incorporated.
That's not part of Senator Bach's motion. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, I think we know how we're going to vote. On Senator Bach's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
No. Motion does prevail. All right, Senator Chaudhry moves the rest of the language as amended. Senator Parisot.
Madam Chair, I have an oral amendment I would like to make, and it will be on pages.
Is this on the bill, on the stocking
yes.
bill, on the stocking language? We still have Senator Chaudhry's original motion in front of us, which simply adds this is a one-time appropriation. I think that's the only thing we don't have.
I'll wait.
I thought, Madam Chair, I thought Senator Chaudhry incorporated that into the I was assuming now you
Bach's?
Have you have Senate File 3243, the language of it as amended by committee to it was offered as an amendment to Senate File 3385. So I think the motion is just to amend this now to 3385.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to
So clear. Senator Chaudhry moves. Do you want to move the amendment now?
I'll renew my motion.
All right. As amended. Does everyone understand what's left of it is being moved by Senator Chaudhry. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Motion prevails. Okay.
Madam Chair, my last amendment is
Senator Chaudhry.
A18.
Senator Paris, though, sorry, we'll come back to you.
Sure.
Additional appropriation. Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, this is relating to the lead shot ban for upland game in the ag zone. I'm moving to delete it. This bill was heard in my committee. It did not receive any opposition in the committee. However, since the omnibus bill passed our committee, there has been quite a bit of opposition voiced, particularly on whether some of the information we were given moving forward with this was adequate to justify the policy, and I tend to agree. So I'm moving to delete the ban and then insert that the that there be a study of lead shot on specifically upland game.
Senator Chaudhry, yeah. I'm kind of disappointed to see you're going to take this out. It seemed to me it was very narrowly crafted. You know, we've been hearing in the news about lead poisoning in venison. I know this doesn't apply to deer hunting at all. It's very a narrow, targeted part of the state. What's the gist of the opposition? I mean, is there other shot available that people can use for small game hunting?
The gist of the opposition is that there isn't, first of all, there isn't enough information. Second of all, there isn't enough time for preparation, given the size of the change we're making. The DNR did a non-toxic shot study with advisory committee with a report. I looked at that report. All of the studies were relating to either waterfowl or doves and some other types of birds, but not upland game birds, particularly pheasant or grouse or turkey or prairie chickens or rabbits. You know, I agree that there's probably a fair indication that lead does have an impact on animals and the ground, but I think if we're going to make people change the type of shotgun they're using, if we're going to make people, if we're going to have an economic impact on sales, if we're going to make people buy far more expensive shot, steel or tungsten or bismuth, and if we're going to possibly threaten jobs in some of our ammunition manufacturing, particularly in my county in Anoka, I think we should have information on point, and I think that's fair.
Senator Chaudhry, you said there wasn't enough time. This is 3 years. I mean, would more time make a difference?
Madam Chair, yes.
How much time do they need to adjust?
Madam Chair, yes. The Non-Toxic Shock Advisory Committee unanimously indicated that 6 years were needed for not only the industry to adjust, but for people to have the opportunity to expend their lead shot. And also, a lot of shotguns are simply not steel compliant, so to speak. You could damage your gun if you use steel. So a lot of people are going to have to buy a different gun.
So, Senator Chaudhry, why not just amend this to 2014?
Well, I mean, Madam Chair, that's one of the reasons. That's just one of the reasons. I think we should have studies on point that that indicate that there is a direct link between lead and some of these upland game.
Okay. Is there any doubt that anyone who ingests it, there's a direct link? You can get lead poisoning. But, I mean, I don't know in terms of the impact on the game itself and the environment.
Madam Chair, I know of no instance, and nor was it reported by the DNR, that anyone, any pheasant hunter, has been hurt in any way by lead poisoning. And so maybe that impacts the animals. Maybe there are people out there that have been hurt that we don't know about. I think it's fair, if we're going to make this big change, to have some specific studies on point. And I'm here to say that if the same type of information comes out relating to pheasants or other upland game that we have for waterfowl or doves, that I certainly will be proposing a lead shot ban. Well, but the information isn't on point at this time.
Senator Shadry, your study doesn't get to the issue of impacts of on humans of eating the game or impacts on the environment. It just talks about the impacts on the game specifically. I would think you'd want to know those things, too. I mean, is any of this getting in the water? I mean, there's a lot of other questions you would ask. Or if hunters...
I'm sure that's fine. That's fine.
Well, I'm not proposing that as an amendment. I'm just asking, pointing that out at this
point. We can do that. We can have that in there, too.
Senator Paroso.
Madam Chair, most of the game that's mentioned on line 16 there in Even Rabbit, actually, whenever I've cooked it and there are pellets in there, you know, if you bite down on a lead one, you don't break your teeth. Try that with steel. And you don't eat it. You don't swallow it. Pick it out. I used to dig it out as I dig it out with the knife point, but sometimes I'd miss one and somebody nail one on their teeth.
Senator Paroso, just lead. You know just a lot more about this than I do, but lead, you know, I'd rather get, you know, hurt my teeth than get brain damage. You know, lead is pretty bad stuff to ingest.
Well, what I'm saying, Madam Chair, is that there are a lot of reasons, and a couple more reasons that I don't believe Senator Shadry mentioned, are that the cost of I spoke to a manufacturer, a person who was associated with a manufacturer right in Minnesota yesterday, and he talked about the cost of going to steel. And, you know, you take the kids that run these small firearms, the kids do, squirrels, rabbits, yada, yada, and that sort of thing, it would cost them $3 a shell to shoot at a squirrel. Maybe they'd have to hit it, use five shots before they hit it. How do we know? And besides that, it's still a cost also to all, and it can ruin some of the older models of guns, because it really ruins the inside of the barrel. The steel does. In many cases, the barrel is not up to that.
Senator Pierce,
damage.
I think you and Senator Shadry are correct that there's an economic impact to making a change.
Is.
There's no doubt about that. But there's also some significant environmental and health impact to not making a change. And
I understand that, but
of.
I do think
we
that a study is the best start.
Madam Chair,
Senator Shadry.
I agree, and I don't want this to be seen as me or anyone else for that matter, and I've spoken with industry as well, abandoning the issue of lead shot in upland game. That's not my intent here at all. But I think I'm simply saying that if there is an economic impact, if there are not only on jobs but on the outdoor industry, on individuals, then I think there should be specific justification. And I was surprised to in my review of the non-toxic shot advisory report that there was none. There was ample evidence for waterfall. There was, and we have banned lead for use of waterfall. There was ample evidence for doves, and the DNR has banned lead on managed dove fields. But I was surprised to see that there was nothing. I did see one reference to pheasant, and that was a 1965 study. So, and for, certainly for none of these other animals. So. I think it's fair to say if we're going to make a big change, then let's study the issue in specific and land and human health. I don't think that's really a huge question, but if we need to study that as well, we can do that.
Last question for me, and then I'll call on Senator Fredrickson. You don't have anything in here about a date that it would be done by, and we don't know what the cost would be of such a study. Have you thought about that?
Madam Chair, I didn't include a date because of the cost issue. This simply says that the DNR shall study it. If there is an estimate of a cost and it's reasonable and this committee wants to assign a dollar amount to it and have a date that by which they must report to us, I'm fine with that.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, I share your chagrin that this is coming out of, or might come out of this bill. I've looked at some of the research also. It included pheasants and also other upland birds, and I think there's significant evidence that birds ingesting the lead shot harms the reproduction effort of those species. You know, and this is for public hunting on public lands, the section that's in the bill. So there's liable to be an accumulation of some lead shot on the ground. And the bird metabolism, keeping in mind that a bird has no teeth, the bird picks up grit to help digest its food, and it accumulates in the gizzard of the bird That's what helps digest the food. And I don't think a bird can tell much difference between a piece of lead shot and a piece of grit. And if it eats the lead shot, it's going to stay in the bird, and it's going to accumulate, and it's going to affect the reproductive capacity of the bird. Perhaps fewer eggs are eggs with a higher mortality rate. And on one hand, we're going to spend probably millions of dollars developing public hunting lands, yet we're going to permit lead to be used on those hunting lands, which is going to decrease the reproduction of birds on that land. I would like to see us move forward far more aggressively than Senator Chaudhry's amendment that we have before us.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, I look around. I bet there isn't one of us didn't start out shooting 22. I shot a 22 and I was 65 years ago. We have. That's what we did.
It's only 10 years old.
There isn't one youngster that hasn't started out with a 22.
Shot bottles.
Then you graduate up to a bigger rifle or shotgun.
Shotguns, yeah.
As far as Senator Fredrickson, as far as going around, I'm smart enough to know, and I have restored a big lake. You can't hunt there with lead shot. Because the game warden's going to come along, he's going to take that nice shotgun away from you and find you. Can't use lead shot when you're in any body of water. You just can't. You can use steel. I got two guns. You couldn't pay me enough to shoot steel. Let steel shot through those. They're priceless. They're the old ones. But that Damascus barrel, you can't shoot them. You have to use lead shot. I'm okay if we can study it. You know, Senator Anderson, I've hunted deer all my life. I'm going to still keep eating deer, even if they say you maybe shouldn't. That's something else we need to also study. So let's not take away a chance for youngsters. My grandchildren will start out. I'll train them on a 22. I really started out with a BB gun, to tell you the truth. That's all we're doing.
Yeah. Most of them do.
When I was a kid, the only thing I shot was bottles, so I guess I don't know what kind of BBs they were.
Clarification, the existing language says non-toxic shot. 22. I think that excludes 22s and other rifle shot. It's shotguns with loaded with shot.
Madam Chair and Senator Fredrickson, you're right. This would not apply to bullets anyway.
Well, Madam Chair, then I apologize for not reading,
Vickerman.
But I've had a long day.
Okay. All right.
Madam Chair. Where are you, Madam Chair?
We're going to vote.
Madam Chair, I still have an oral amendment I want to make.
On the A18 amendment?
No, on the bill.
We've got the A18 amendment in front of us that Senator Chaudhry has offered. We haven't voted yet. I'm going to wait and see if it passes. Because I don't support it. All right. On the A18 amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Chair votes no. Just for the record. Motion prevails. All right, Senator Chaudhry, I'm going to ask you to incorporate some language into this language, if you could, that would just include, now that it's passed on the A18 amendment, to include human health and environmental impact. Mr. Knopf, do you have a
Madam Chair, I think one way to do this would be before effects, insert environmental and human health, and after of, insert the use of. So we shall study the environmental and human health effects of the use of lead shot in upland game.
What line?
Oh, 1.5.
Yeah.
It'd be before effects, insert environmental and human health.
Okay.
That way, Madam Chair, you're narrowing it down to the hunting on the land as opposed to the wetlands or when you're hunting.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, it'd be and then after of, insert the use of. So before effects, insert environmental and human health. After the second of, between of and lead, insert the use of. So it would be the environment and human health effects of the use of lead shot in upland game, including but not limited to.
Okay. Senator Chaudhry, are you all right with that?
Yeah. And did you want to have a date in there as well, Madam Chair?
I think we ought to, but Have you talked to DNR about this? Let's just say they can do it. By a couple years, next year?
That's fine.
Do you want to incorporate that to by February 2009?
February 1st?
Sure. That works for me. Shouldn't take that long. Basically, I think they'd survey the research, and then I don't know if they'd have to do any original research themselves.
So, Madam Chair, that would be on line 1.7 before, because that's the actual reporting, and it says may provide information. So you probably want to change the may to shall. So by February 1, 2009, the commissioner shall provide information, reports, and recommendations.
Yes.
So before before the commissioner on line 1.7, insert by February 1, 2009, comma, and then delete the may and insert shall.
Okay, Senator Chavarri, that way we'll at least take a look at it next year and see what they've come up with by next year, see if
fine.
It's adequate. At least it'll get us, keep the discussion moving forward.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, Senator Chaudhry will move that language as stated by Mr. Knopf. Any objection to that or any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you. That helps.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Just a quick comment.
Oh, sorry. Senator Paraso, I'll get back. You're next.
Well, I talked about shooting with 22. I got
sure.
news for you. You can buy
sure.
red shots. You can buy shots for 22 because I've done it. I've got pigeons with
me too.
So we don't shoot.
Senator Paraso.
Madam Chair, I have an amendment I'd like to do orally, and it's on page 40 and 50 of the bill, and it is section 24 of Article 3, and I'd like to have that. I would move that that be removed from the bill, deleted from the bill.
Page 40. What page? What article?
Article 3, section 24.
Page
40 and 41.
Page 40.
40 and 41.
So it's the language on 40.12 to 40.14.
41.14.
41.12. Okay. All right, Senator Chaudhry.
Oh, I see.
You got some handouts, I guess. Yeah.
I just have one letter to send out, Madam Chair. This is the Anoka County. Carlos Avery and Lamprey Pass Wildlife Management Area issue. We discussed this in the Policy Committee at length.
Just going to do
and we also voted on this on the floor last year. This has been further narrowed since last year in that it only this subdivision would only apply to land contiguous to wildlife management areas. Basically, this is the issue that where the landowners would like to sell their land to the DNR. DNR would like to buy that land from the owners and add it to last year it was just the Carlos Avery Wildlife Management Area. Now there are three more landowners that have come forward with this problem. Have not been allowed to by the county at the request of the city. So this has passed our committee's structure before. It failed on a tie vote on the floor last year, but I've further narrowed it since last year. And I would ask members to oppose the amendment.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I just would like to understand why we're doing this in a particular way. Why wouldn't we just change the entire provision to, set aside the entire provision? I guess what I'm having a hard time with is why does it make sense to do it in this case only and not in all other cases that may involve land acquisitions that the department is engaged with? Why are we calling this out specifically? I guess I have some concern about, again, putting in statute something that is contrary to the statute, making an exception for, I guess, maybe an individual, or I don't know how many individuals would be affected by this. But if it's good policy, why wouldn't we just do it generally and say, let's just change the whole way we do this and not not include the provisions that provide for the county and the townships and the appeal process that landowners currently have in the law? Why wouldn't we just set that aside and just say DNR can do it?
Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn, because the policy works in most instances. This is a particularly egregious instance where not only has there been no reason given except for that this land wants to be, that the city wants to develop these people's land, albeit the land has not been zoned for development. It's in a shoreland protection zone. It's in a wetland protection zone. Many of these properties are largely undevelopable, yet there's not this allowance for a willing seller to be able to sell their property to a willing buyer. And I'm bringing this back this year because the problem has been exacerbated since last year. There are more landowners who are encountering problems with this particular city in this particular county.
Madam Chair.
Senator Paraso.
Madam Chair, I believe that, as I understand it now, a township, a city, and a county all have local planning authority, and they have the authority to sit down and talk to each other and resolve
local
it on their
control,
own.
Don't forget
the local control. They all have the option for authorizing a deal, and DNR can enter into those. All those partners can get together and deal it up. And that's what I think they were trying to do.
Madam Chair, the DNR has tried extensively to do that.
And Senator Chaudhry, this is what's different is that this talks about it being contiguous to the other land. That's new?
Yes.
From last year. Okay. That's the part that's narrower. All right. I think we pretty much understand the issue. Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, remind me so that I don't get knocked on the head tomorrow when we go to session. Who are the senators that represent this area of Carlos Avery and Lamprey Pass? Because I'd like to know what they think.
I think
I'm not sure who they are. I remember Senator Betzold had an issue with this last year, but I just am curious who represents these two areas.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I think it's only Senator Vandeveer.
Senator Hahn?
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I guess to Senator Chaudhry, I appreciate your explanation, but as I read the law, the language of the law as it exists today, it clearly anticipates that there could be land acquisition efforts that are not approved by local authority. It clearly anticipates that in the way the law is written. And to say that in the case where one is denied, we should write a provision to set aside the statute, it seems to me that if that's what we want to do, we should just set aside it generally. If the current law provides for and anticipates that there could be instances where a local authority would say no, then we should respect that. If we say we don't want to give them that authority, then we ought to just delete the whole thing and say let the DNR proceed as it would do it, and let's take the local folks out. I guess I'm struggling with how this is a good policy step for us as a state legislature. So I guess I'm struggling with that.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, you could think of this as a pilot project then. I think the reason why this is unique is for the reasons I explained. But also, you know, particularly in greater Minnesota where you have large expanses of public land, I think there is justification for the county to be able to review these types of transactions between private parties. In this case, you know, the transaction is sought to be private. But in the metro area, we have kind of the opposite problem. We have a lot of developed land, but very little public open space. And Carlos Avery is the largest wildlife management area in the metro area. This is a particularly unique parcel that needs to be protected. I should also mention I passed out a letter from the Conservation Federation, Minnesota Conservation Federation. I had a letter, and I think I might have left it up in my office from the Trust for Public Land as well. Oh, it's on the back. I'm sorry. I was saving paper.
That's right. Okay, I think we understand the issue. We've heard this before.
Madam Chair, I ask for a roll call vote. I ask for a roll call vote on this.
Okay, a roll call has been requested.
And Madam Chair, this is to take strike G.
Senator Vickerman, what? Yes. To strike the whole section, which is section 24, which would have the effect of striking that new language.
Yes, it strikes the new language. That's all it does.
All right.
Are you ready?
I guess. Okay. The clerk will take the roll.
Senator Anderson.
No.
Senator Bach.
Yes.
Senator Chaudhry.
No.
Senator Dill.
No.
Senator Fredrickson.
No.
Senator Hahn.
Yes.
Senator Kubley.
I pass. I don't know what we're voting on.
Senator Paraso.
Yes.
Senator Rummel.
No.
Senator Saxog.
No.
What are we taking that out?
No. Senator Torres Ray.
No.
Senator Vickerman.
Yes.
That's it. On the vote of 4-7, the motion does not prevail. All right. I have an amendment I want to get done, which I'm going to – Senator Chaudhry has agreed to offer on my behalf. This is the A21 amendment, and there's some folks here that – this is an issue that does need just a very brief discussion. This is an issue that was brought to my attention by the local recycling folks at Eureka Recycling, who are trying to recycle organic waste. And apparently there's something in our solid waste laws that prevent them from doing that because it's defined as garbage and so they can't recycle it. Now, I've been told that by the proponents that everybody in the world who cares about this is fine with it, and nobody opposes it. And so on that basis, I have asked if Senator Chaudhry, he's graciously agreed to offer this amendment. Ms. Hubbard, could you come on up just for, you know, very briefly explain this to the committee members because this is new language.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'm Susan Hubbard. Thank you for your time. I will be brief. I just wanted to let you know that this language basically clears up a definition of the current definition of solid waste, which currently says that the source-separated organics, which would be your food scraps and your cut flowers when they've died, those kinds of things in your house, are considered garbage and that they have to be handled in a particular way, which really precludes them from being composted. It's obviously not what anybody wants to see happen. Currently, the cities of Wayzata, Minnetonka, Hutchinson, Osseo, Eden Prairie, also the Western Lake Sewer, the Western Lake Superior Sanitation District, as well as the cities of St. Paul and Minneapolis, are venturing to introduce these pilot projects, but are hampered by actually making an investment and a long-term commitment based on the fact that each one of these projects has to go through sort of a variance waiver through the PCA because of this technicality of this language, which says that source-separated organics are garbage and have to be handled specifically like garbage. And so we know that the companies in the metro area, including the city of Minneapolis itself, but also Randy Sanitation, BFI Waste Management, are all handling this material. So all of them are collecting this compostable material to take it to compost. We also know that the benefit of handling this is 25% of our current waste stream, and we know that if we meet our projected goals over the next 15 years, we would reduce the greenhouse gases by 4.9 million metric tons CO2 equivalent, which is basically about 610,000 cars off the road. This has the support of the Solid Waste Management Coordinating Board. There's no opposition to it. It went through the House with no opposition, and currently Representative Gardner is working with Representative Atkins in the House File 3163.
Thank you, Ms. Hubbard. And this is one section taken out of a bill of Senator Olsen's, but that did not receive a hearing in Senator Chaudhry's committee this year. So the language has been introduced as part of a bill. I have no idea what else is in the bill, so this doesn't affect the rest of the bill. And we should ask the PCA if they wouldn't mind commenting briefly, just to make sure we know that, as I understand it, they're – okay. Ms. Hubbard, you've spoken with someone at PCA, I believe.
Yeah, we've had several conversations with PCA, and there's no opposition to this. There's several variances right now the PCA is granting to allow for the problems that are the obstacles that are actually caused by this current language. They're actually having to create variances in current permits to allow this to happen.
So, do you want to say anything? Okay, you're shaking their heads. We'll take that as an indication that they're fine with the language. Senator Hahn?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize, but I'm wondering if Ms. Hubbard could tell us who she represents, if anyone other than herself. I'm not familiar with
I'm sorry. That. Yes, I'm with Eureka Recycling. I apologize. We're the nonprofit waste reduction organization. We've been working on waste reduction recycling issues in the metro area for 7 years. We came out of another nonprofit called the Neighborhood Energy Consortium that's been working on these issues for over 20 years.
And I did ask Ms. Hubbard also about the waste management companies, and she indicated they're all in support of this as well. They all do recycling programs. Mr. Robertson, can we ask you? We don't know that any of them are here, but can you speak for them? It's okay. He says it's okay, too. And personally, I've been waiting for this composting program to start, so I have a place to dump all my compost besides in the backyard. And, in the city, that doesn't work quite as well. So I think this is really a good idea to help this move forward. So I would appreciate member support. Is there any further discussion on this? Would anyone else like to address this amendment? Okay, great. Senator Chaudhry then moves the A21 amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you, Ms. Hubbard.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Saxhog.
Madam Chair, I have the A20 amendment. Madam Chair, this is a relatively simple amendment. It has to do with Article 1, Section 4. And this involves Senator Dibble, and Senator Dibble has okayed this. Basically excludes state or any other political subdivision. Until Senator Dibble may narrow this down, he
shouldn't tell local governments they
would be a fine exception. Bill, Mr. Johnson,
good idea, local governments.
We have questions. Okay.
Madam Chair, just wanted to explain to committee members, this is to the A10 amendment. I'm not sure if that's still in your packet. That was the large amendment that Senator Chaudhry offered last week. And what happened was the local notification requirements were completely amended within that. In fact, there was an amendment to that, and you'll see that in here, that Senator Bach moved unless exempted under 116.47. So I just included that in this, but it's an amendment to the 810.
And this is the amendment that related to the language about leaking tanks and the requirement of notifying local communities.
And so what this adds is basically unless exempted under Section 116.47, that was adopted by the committee last week. But this adds in or in cases where the owner is the state or a political subdivision as defined, and that's a fairly broad definition of political subdivision in 103G.005.
So this requires the tank owner to do the notification, and it's exempting a government entity.
Right.
Okay. From that, because they already have requirements, some requirements. All right. Okay, on Senator Saxhog's motion. Senator Chaudhry, do you have any opinion on this?
I don't.
Okay. Is there anyone who'd like to speak in opposition to the A20 amendment? All right. Hearing no opposition, any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Senator Saxhog.
And, Madam Chair, I have another amendment, an oral amendment, and what it is Article 3, Section 75, to delete Section 75, and that's the
Page 63.
And that's basically for the walleye limit to go from 6 to 4.
Okay, say which section again? We're on page 63.
75.
Section 75, the rule amendments.
And I, if I could, Madam Chair, make a few comments. You heard me talk a little bit early in our session here about the fact that
right now the DNR has the ability through rules to go to a limit of four, and in many lakes that they feel are there's a problem, they have gone to four. They've used slot limits in many different ways. The DNR has given me not any real indication that going to four has any there's any true biological compelling reason to go to four. It is, as Senator Chaudhry said many times, is kind of a mindset that he would like us to go to. But I think at the present time, I'd rather see the DNR do the rulemaking, and for that reason, I'd like to strike Section 75.
All right, Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, the first point I make is that this does involve the rulemaking. We don't set in statute the limit going from six to four, which simply says that the commissioner may use the good cause exemption under these statutes to amend Minnesota rules. So this doesn't put the walleye limit in statute. It just gives them permission to amend this by rules. This was requested by the DNR. This was part of a department bill, so it was included. I, for one, think it's a good idea for a number of reasons. First of all, the DNR did testify to this, that conserve at least 7% of the harvest by reducing the limit from 6 to 4. This issue was discussed at the DNR roundtable in January in the fisheries section. I attended that as well, and there was overwhelming support for the reduction. I should note that the Outdoor News did a poll of this issue, reducing the limit, and 63% of the respondents voted in favor of it. So I think there's a strong support amongst anglers to reduce the limit and conserve our resource. And I think it's a good idea. I would encourage members to vote no.
Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe counsel can answer this, but if this rule amendment stays in here, does this bill then have to go to the local government committee? Doesn't all rulemaking authority have to go through the local government committee?
I had to take mine.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bach, I think you've got a good point, because it does exempt them from the normal rulemaking process. The good cause exemption means that they basically just publish the rule, and it can become effective without going through the hearing process. And the Senate rules do state that if you're either authorizing new rulemaking authority or exempting somebody from rulemaking authority, that it does have to go through the state and local government committee.
Senator Chaudhry.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bach and Mr. Knopf, I thought that it did.
Yes,
Mr. Knopf.
Chairman, Senator Bach, I think that this was in your game and fish bill, which did go through that committee. So since if that bill has gone through the committee,
right,
then this one would be okay, as far as that provision.
Right.
Further discussion on the amendment?
Well,
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, just let me speak in support of the Saxog Amendment. The DNR can establish a limit of four walleyes now. They simply have to go through the rulemaking process, go to an administrative law judge, and have a public comment period. And if they're successful, they can go to four fish. But this allows them really to just publish a rule, to not go through the regular rulemaking process. I don't see any reason to give the department this expedited rulemaking process. I mean, I just don't see why we would give them the authority to make it a four fish rule statewide without any public comment, without going in front of a judge, when most of our lakes, there's no reason the limit couldn't be six. There's just no scientific reason in a whole lot of lakes that the limit should be four. But letting the department use an expedited rulemaking process like this and really not having to prove there's a scientific reason, I think it's a mistake for us to give them that authority. I mean, the legislature limits the department's authority subject to rulemaking. And when we allow them to use exemptions, really essentially exemptions from the normal rulemaking process, I think that's a mistake because the public doesn't have any opportunity to participate in that process, either by us or in front of a judge.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to make sure I understand what's in the bill right now. And so what this does is give the department ability to bypass the normal rulemaking process to set the limit of 4, but if they want to set the limit at 3 or 5 or any other number, they would still have to go through the regular rulemaking process. Is that correct, Senator Chaudhary? That only if they establish a limit of 4 do they get that exemption?
Senator Chaudhary.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, yes. It's very specific to establishing the limit at 4.
Well, then, Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhary, I think Senator Saxog's got a good point. We're writing a limit into law, and I think that's not appropriate.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, no. We're just, first of all, if you see the word may, that's a very permissive word. So we're not setting the limit. If the DNR, after we pass this provision, changes its mind and says, no, I don't think we should, then nothing changes. So we are not changing, putting this into statute.
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhary, I think then maybe that the language should say that they may establish a daily in possession limit and leave it blank as to the number. I think when you put in the specific number, I think it has the effect of saying that is going to be the law. And I think
Chair,
Senator Saxon's point is well taken.
Well, Senator Hahn, it
Chair
doesn't
Sarah
require
Hahn.
Them to do this. That's, I think that's all.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, I wouldn't have a problem with that.
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, I have a lot of resorts in my district, and 2A1, the ones I've heard from them, object to this. They just object to the department sitting over there on Lafayette being able to change the water limit to 4 without any kind of process, either through the legislature or through a public rulemaking process where they have to go in front of a judge to allow them really to just arbitrarily change the walleye limit. And I haven't heard from one resort, not one, that thinks this is a good idea. And in my neck of the state, tourism is very, very important. And part of the reason people come to the lakes region is to catch walleyes. And if there's not a scientific reason the limit should be reduced from 6 to 4, then we shouldn't reduce it from 6 to 4.
Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think the important thing here is that in instances in lakes where there has been a significant reduction in the walleye population, the process has been used, and by either reducing the limit or using a slot limit or whatever, the DNR has really been pretty effective in preserving the fishery. So I just don't think we need to do this either.
Okay, I think everyone understands the motion. Senator Chaudhary.
I just wanted to make a couple comments. I take a little bit of issue with the process question because this has been a very open process and we've had ample opportunity for discussion. In fact, I indicated, and so did the DNR indicate, that it was our intent to propose this back in December, and it received a lot of public attention. And this was discussed in the DNR roundtable, where there was support for it. And I have talked to resorts, and I met with one a resort owner on Lake of the Woods last week. He's a county commissioner as well. He said, "Yes, we should have a statewide 4." Walleye limit. The Congress of Minnesota Resorts does not oppose this, and so I think there should be an indication that actually reducing the walleye limit doesn't reduce fishing; it actually improves fishing because there are more fish to catch. And I think that's the experience that many of these resorts have had that do have the 4 walleye limit. All of our major walleye fisheries already have the 4 walleye limit: Mille Lacs, leech, lake of the woods, vermilion. I'm sure you would have had a bill to increase the walleye limit from 4 to 6 on those lakes had it had such a devastating economic effect as some people say it will be. The fact of the matter is it's helped. I think the science of this is conservation. Conservation is the scientific reason behind this, and the DNR has testified that we will conserve at least 7% of the harvest if we move forward with this. So, and this is a permissive language. Doesn't require the DNR changes its mind after this, they can do so.
Okay. All right. On the motion to delete Section 75, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
The motion prevails.
Vision.
All in favor, raise your hand. I guess I... Those opposed, raise your hand. I guess I heard right. Motion does prevail. All right. Are there any further amendments on the bill? Senator Parisot.
Madam Chair, I would move to delete on page 61 of the bill, line 61.15. Non-resident spearing.
Page 61, line 61.15, which would be section 68. So you'd move to
section
delete
68,
section
68. Correct.
Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, when we heard this bill, we couldn't really find any issue with this provision, and so we inserted it. In fact, the DNR couldn't even think of a reason why. Since then, the State Minnesota Dark House Association has indicated that it vehemently opposes this provision. They did so in writing. And there may be viable reasons for this, but I think there should be further discussion, at least during the interim, certainly a fuller debating committee before we move forward with this.
So you don't oppose the amendment?
Correct.
Mr. Knopf, I think we need to add something to that.
Yeah, Madam Chair, on page 48, section 39, that's the license fee for a non-resident to spear from a dark house. And I think you'd want to delete 48? Both sections are kind of matched or paired.
Right.
Okay. So
section page 48, section 39, and then on page 61, section 68. So those two sections would need to be deleted together. Reduces the money.
Mr. Mueller, how does it affect the Game and Fish Fund?
Madam Chair and members, the DNR had estimated that this would bring in, allowing non-resident people to spear would bring in an extra $113,000 per year into the Game and Fish Fund.
All right. Does everyone understand the amendment?
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. It doesn't appear that we need to strike the entire section of 39, Mr. It looks like it just, primarily 48.14 and a couple of
in the end.
Small I think that's the only, amendment that's in section 39.
Yeah. All right. You're not striking the whole section from law.
It's just striking the new underlined language. No, we're not changing current law at all. So we just take out the new language by striking section 39. So, yeah, good clarification. Senator Deal.
Well, Madam Chair, I would like Senator Parisot or somebody to explain why we want to do that.
Senator Parisot. I'm doing it at the request of the association. Senator Deal.
Okay.
Senator Chaudhry.
And we haven't had a non-resident spearing in the past, so it's new.
Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, what's been indicated to me is that there are some reciprocity issues that they'd prefer to work out before they move forward with allowing this.
We can't spear in their lakes.
Something about the goose and the gander type thing? Yeah.
Correct.
So any further discussion on Senator Paraso's motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Any further discussion? Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, I have some amendments here, but I think most of them are pretty easy. Let's start with the A16. That's probably the easiest.
I thought she had her hand up. Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, I believe this is technical. What this does in the Dibble language that we put in about notification on tanks, this just makes it clear that that notification doesn't apply to tanks under law that are currently exempted.
Yep. Madam Chair, this is the belt, and he put the suspenders on last time. This would also include any sections that are coded between those two. So, for future reference, if sections are added to this dealing with underground storage tanks, it would automatically pick up these restrictions or these conditions or these exemptions in the future, too.
Okay.
And, Madam Chair, the only new section brought in is Senator Dibble's section, the way this is drafted.
All right. We'll let everybody take a look at it. And Senator Dibble, has Senator Dibble seen this? This is a continuation of Senator Bach's.
Purely technical.
It's technical. It just sort of spells out the tanks. Okay. You're fine with this, I assume? We're told it's purely technical.
It is.
All right.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I thought we did it last week. But
that's what I thought, too. It sounds familiar already.
But I don't think we
Madam
quite
Chair,
got it.
You put it in the section that Senator Dibble had. You said unless exempted. This is actually going to put that section so it's clear in both ways. If you look at the exemptions, you know it doesn't apply, and you
see.
Also look at it. Belt
so just
suspenders.
Cross-references each
yep.
other.
Yep. Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yep.
Gotcha. Thank you. I just want to make sure I understand. All right, Senator Dibble, thanks for being on the job here. All right, on Senator Bach's motion, is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Torres Ray, you ready with an amendment?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I have the A23 amendment, which really just intends to clean up the language that we inserted into the bill last time we had a hearing about the burner project. Apparently, the language that we had was problematic, and PCA advised us to change a couple of things in the language we adopted. And we have dealt with those two things. I don't think it was necessary to put an amendment to have all of this language, but that's the way it was written. So there are just two things that are new. In the current language, it says that the agency may not issue a permit. And what we want to say is a new permit, because if we don't have the word new in there, it implies that we can, you know, really go back and review permits that we had already issued. And the other thing is that the conditions or the descriptions of the community that was incorporated in the language will apply to many localities in the state of Minnesota, and that's really not our intent to create this provision for other areas other than Hennepin County. So we inserted the language City of the First Class in Hennepin County, which will only apply to the project that we are pursuing right now.
Okay. All right.
So those are the only two languages, and so that restricts this language to the project that we discussed last week.
Okay, great. Thank you. I see Senator Berglund and David Thornton are conferring. Is everybody comfortable with this amendment? He's nodding, and Senator Berglund is nodding. Okay. We have unanimous nodding.
Not to sleep, we hope.
All right. Senator Chaudhry, are you comfortable with this?
All right. Is there any further discussion on the A23 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, on behalf of Senator Saltzman, I'd like to offer the A5.
Thank you. Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, a couple of years ago, I worked with Senator LeClaire, and there was a housing development built across the road from De Monterville Lake. And those owners were given an easement, the right to have a dock across the road on De Monterville Lake. There's a narrow strip of DNR land. And when we crafted that and put that in law, we didn't contemplate the idea that easement should go with a future property owner. Now, one of those homes has sold, and their neighbors all have access to the dock across the road, but because this is a new owner of the house, they don't have access to the same dock that their neighbors have access to. So this just allows the easement to be able to transfer in the event that the property is conveyed to a new owner.
Okay. Senator Saxhog.
And, Madam Chair, this was in my Lands Committee subcommittee 2 years ago, and we were looking for a solution. In fact, we had 5 meetings trying to figure it out, and this is a much better solution than the one we came up with originally. So I support the amendment.
All right. Senator Chaudhry.
I'm glad to hear that there was a committee that was working on it. I was just kind of concerned when we have amendments we haven't heard of, and, you know, the one line can make a big difference on an issue. So, but if this has been studied thoroughly, then I'll support it.
Madam Chair, I believe the department supports it.
All right. Well, Mr. Meyer, do you have any opinion? He's nodding. Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Anyone else like to be heard on this? Okay. On the A5 amendment, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, let's try the A17.
All right, Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, the A17 is a issue that will be familiar to the members of the committee when we start talking about this. Last year, we changed the law so that somebody that has a portable fishing shelter takes it out on the lake, doesn't have to have a license on it as long as they remove it at the end of the day, as long as they don't leave it on the water overnight. I think that's worked pretty well. I know there are an awful lot of happy constituents of mine and probably yours that were glad they didn't have to buy a shelter license for a temporary shelter that in most cases is pulled behind their snowmobile or they walk out onto the lake with and pull it on a toboggan. And I think it's worked pretty well, except that now in this year's bill, the department has proposed essentially undoing that by saying that if you have a shelter on the lake and you leave it unattended, that you have to have a license on it. So consequently, what could happen is now it's not an issue of overnight. It's a matter of if you have a portable little fish house and you take it out on the lake with you, if you decide to go into the cabin to have lunch and leave your shelter behind, you now have to have a license on it. Even though it is temporary, it's not going to be left there overnight, but if you leave it unattended, now you have to have a license on it. And I think that's just another way of trying to get around the fact that last year the legislature tried to provide that portable fish houses and portable shelters didn't need a license if they weren't left overnight. So this amendment takes the department provisions out of the bill and I think restores the legislative intent that the only time you have to have a license on a fish house is when it's left on the lake overnight.
And
Mr. Knapp?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to also remind Senator Buck, it also, right now the department's proposing licensing all shelters regardless of whether you fish from them or not. This would also eliminate the requirement that non-fishing shelters are licensed by the department.
So whether they're overnight or not, you mean?
Madam Chair, in any instance, under current law, you only need a license if you are the shelter is used for fishing. Under the department's proposal this year, it would be all shelters would be required to have a license. So this also eliminates the licensing requirements for those non-fishing house shelters, like a warming house for skaters or something like that.
All right, Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, I guess the implications of the department bill, I guess we're not fully known. We heard it, and Senator Bach raised these issues, and that is, in fact, what the provision does in this bill, and I would support removing it.
All right. Any further discussion on the A-17 amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, the A-12.
Senator Bach. Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, under current law, when an individual purchases a snowmobile from a dealer, it's the dealer's responsibility to make sure that the snowmobile gets registered so that the fees are paid for the license. And so that's what happens. And I actually bought a new snowmobile for my wife this winter, and the dealer filled out the paperwork, gave me a 10-day permit for the machine, and about 8 or 10 days later, my registration slip came in the mail, my sticker to stick for my trail sticker and my regular registration sticker. But what did not come in the mail are the numbers that you actually have to display on the machine. And the department used to do that. They used to supply those numbers, and I don't know why a few years ago we quit doing that, but for some reason or another we quit having the department supply the actual letters that you affix to the machine. The problem is somebody buys a machine, they get their stickers in the mail, they put them on the sled, and they go on their way snowmobiling, not thinking that, oh, gosh, I forgot, or why would they think that they need to go down to the sign store or to the hardware store somewhere and buy the actual numbers that need to be displayed in addition to the stickers. Now, truth is, we probably should get rid of the numbers completely. I don't know what function they serve. And they're 2 inches high. It's not as though you can read them from any more than 30 feet away. They're not required to be reflective, so I don't really know what function they really provide. But if the department thinks we need to have the numbers, then I think with the ELS system that we have today, it would be very easy to just, when they print the sticker, the trail sticker and the registration sticker, to just print the numbers along with it and send it all in one strip to the person that bought the sled. Because it would be pretty easy. You get a new sled, you're all excited, you go snowmobiling, your 10-day permit expires, you put your stickers on, but you accidentally forgot. You paid the fees, but you forgot to go down to the store and buy the actual letters to affix the letters. So I think it's the right thing to do. Let's just go back to having the department supply the numbers along with the registration, and I think everybody will be happy.
Okay. Madam Chair,
Senator Chaudhry.
Senator Bach, did somebody get caught without their numbers this winter?
No, two people in my district that got caught without their numbers because they bought sleds and never gave a thought to going and buying.
You don't have to say if you're married to any of them.
Well, one was not my wife.
That's chivalry, you know. Wait a minute.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach,
Senator Chaudhry.
I would prefer that you remove the requirement for the numbers before we take money out of the snowmobile trails and enforcement account.
Right, let's. Maybe we should ask the department what they think about this requirement. Didn't Mr. Meyer, he was just here. Oh, there he is. Okay. Trying to get some. Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Senator Bach has discussed this issue with us. We can figure out how to provide the numbers again. I'm not sure. Colonel Hamm is not here to discuss the numbers, but I can get back to the committee as this is moving forward. And if the senator would wish to go that way, we can. If we're okay with that, we would support that as well.
Well, I assume the numbers, I don't know. I guess it would be nice to hear from enforcement how much they need those numbers on there. They have to be 2 inches high. Does it say that in law? So is it, how hard would it be to put them on the stickers?
Madam Chair, members, I believe part of the problem was our ELS system and the printing of the sticker is why we didn't, why we stopped providing them. But we're also looking at renewing or upgrading our ELS system in the next year or so, which should allow us to do that. Maybe if there is going to be a technical issue, we could put an effective date on this as we move forward on that as well.
Madam Chair, I'm fine with putting an effective date if that's all it requires. And I do remember now that Mr. Meyer said that. The issue was the current ELS technology didn't allow us to do it with the ELS system. And I think we just kind of got caught in the trap of the department thought they could quit issuing them and it would happen in the ELS, and then the technology just didn't allow it. So I think it just kind of fell by the wayside.
Do you have any idea how much it would cost to change over then when you redo the ELS?
Madam Chair, members, it should be minimal as long as we incorporate it into our new standards, which we're just working on right now. And on a previous bill that is moving forward, we use an effective date of June 1st, 2009 on a provision on the House dealing with our ELS, new ELS system.
So we just have one more winter to worry about.
Madam Chair, I'm fine. I don't expect them to update their ELS system just to accommodate this, but they'll be doing other updates, and I think Mr. Meyer's probably right. If they just incorporate this when they do other updates, it's probably a pretty minimal cost.
So if we made it effective June 1st, 2009, we wouldn't have to do the appointment. July 1st, sorry. Then it would be the beginning of the new fiscal year, the new biennium.
Council can suggest the effective date.
And we wouldn't need the appropriation.
Like,
this is an amendment that I was going to offer for Jim.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Mr.
I think, Senator Bach, what you do is on the bottom of page one, insert effective date, colon, this section is effective July 1, 2009, and then I think you could delete all of page two from your amendment. You would need the preparation for that then.
So I'll incorporate that. Okay.
And then, Mr. Meyer, you could get by without paying for this till the next biennium? Okay. He's nodding.
Yes, Madam Chair, yes. Sorry.
All right. So Senator Bach incorporates that amendment to the A-12 amendment. Senator Shadry, are you comfortable with that?
Someone else who bought a snowmobile this past winter, Madam Chair, that would benefit from this in the future.
Okay, there you go. All right.
Although he didn't get ticketed.
Not yet. All right. On the A-12 amendment as amended, I guess. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
I'm here. One last amendment.
Okay. Which is?
The A-11. At least I think it's my last one. I might have to ask counsel that. But.
That's his last one.
So how
I got one, but I don't know anybody's.
Make those windows in neon so it can be seen across the lake.
All right, Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, this amendment creates a conservation fishing license in Minnesota. You know, there's been a lot of talk here today about the fishing resource, about the need maybe to go to four walleyes. And I know there's been some pushback to going to four. I think we need to do something to change the culture of fishing. because the culture today, relative to walleyes at least, is you haven't had a successful day on the water unless you come home with your limit. And I think the best way to get people to take less fish is to get them to voluntarily agree to a lower limit. And I think when they make a conscious decision, when they buy their fishing license for the year, that they willingly agree that the walleye limit is less, and in this case, in this bill, would be one half of the limit today. So if a person bought this conservation fishing license, rather than being allowed to take six walleyes, you'd agree to take three. Or on a lake that the limit is four, you'd agree when you buy this conservation license that your limit for the day is two. And when I first raised this with Commissioner Holston, and he's well aware of the issue because when he chaired this committee in the House, when I was over there, we actually had this provision incorporated in the finance bill 1 year when he was the chair and brought it over to the Senate, and the Senate didn't accept it. But when I raised the issue with him this year, he said, go ahead and do it. Nobody's going to buy it anyway. And I think some of the fisheries people probably think that might have a different opinion than the commissioner on that. But and I don't think we know how many people are going to buy it, but I think we should find out. And I think if we can find a way to get people to voluntarily agree when they purchase their license that they're going to have a reduced limit, I think that's how we best change the culture of it's okay and it's a successful day on the water if you actually take less fish. And if I think it'll catch on. I mean, Ontario has this. They've had it as long as I can remember. And I think it'll cause more licenses to be sold because I think some of those people are maybe just going up to a friend's cabin or a relative's cabin for the weekend, might figure, well, for a little less money, maybe I will buy a fishing license. And maybe I'll go out for a little bit. And if I don't go out, well, it's not that big a burden. And I think it'll cause more licenses to be sold, more people to have the opportunity to fish. And I think over the long haul, it could change the culture of fishing that you don't have to have six walleyes to have a successful day on the water. And I think it's much better to let people voluntarily make that decision when they purchase their license than for us here or for the DNR through a rule to just reduce the take. Because that's the criticism I often hear is we charge more, but we get less. I think this is the direction we need to go. If we really think that the fishing resource is under too much pressure, let's give people an opportunity to voluntarily reduce their take. It's an issue whose, I think, time is past due in Minnesota. This should have been done years ago. And I do think it will save a lot of fish. I don't know how many licenses we'll sell. I suspect initially probably not a lot of them. But someday I think we'll sell a lot of them. And that'll be a good thing because then people will voluntarily have changed the culture and agreed they're willing to take less fish. They get to make that decision to take less fish rather than us or rather than the DNR through the rulemaking process. So I think it makes a lot of sense. They're probably, depending on how many people buy this, there's an impact on the Game and Fish Fund that's partially offset by the number of new licenses you sell that you wouldn't have sold otherwise. I don't think, pretty hard, I think, to categorize how many of these might be sold and what the impact might be. But I know there's enough carry forward balance in the Game and Fish Fund that, you know, once we find out what, if any, fiscal impact there is of this, the legislature, I'm sure, is going to be coming with a fishing license increase eventually. And that can be, I think, all worked into the next license increase.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Senator Bach, line 7, the non-resident married couples for 14 consecutive days. Why do you do the 14 days for non-resident married couples and not other non-residents?
Well, Madam Chair, I think Council can explain, but Council? Maybe Council can explain that better than I can.
Well,
we have a special license for non-resident couples.
That's right.
Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, Senator Chaudhary, we do have a special license for non-resident married couples valid for 14 days. And there's a non-resident family and the non-resident individual. The couple of them that you don't have here are the 24-hour. There's a non-resident 7-day that's not included. But this was the language you had from a few years ago, and I didn't know if you wanted to include more than that or not. But it doesn't include the 24-hour, the non-resident 7-day individual.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, Chaudhary. Why do you do 2/3 instead of 1/2? Ontario does 1/2. You'd pay half the license fee as opposed to 2/3.
Well, Senator Bach.
Isn't that greater incentive?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhary, I'm not wed to the 2/3 for the price. It could be half. I mean, I think you probably would sell more if it was half. You'd definitely sell more fishing licenses in the state. I think that's probably an improvement. I just thought this is a place to start that would probably minimize the impact on the Game and Fish Fund. You know, maybe it should be half.
Well, let's hear from Mr. Mueller because it does have a significant impact.
Madam Chair and Senator Bach and members, this is the same language that is in the House Game and Fish bill right now. I was just looking at the fiscal note from the House, and they're projecting about a $2.4 million decrease from this provision. I must remind members that we already have the deer license simplification that's in the bill that also has a $2.1 million decrease in game and fish revenue also. So this would be two pretty big items that would be in the bill that it would have together. I mean, if you take the DNR numbers as they are, it would be about $4.5 million decrease in revenue. And, yes, there is the carry forward in the Game and Fish Fund right now overall runs between $18 and $20 million per year before these provisions. You know, that's usually, I think, what the DNR likes having as their comfortable amount for the amount of money that flows through the Game and Fish Fund to cover fluctuations in revenue and things. But short term, yes, there is a fund balance that could cover this. But long term, I think there would have to be some look at other fee increases or other spending adjustments maybe have to be made to accommodate these things.
It just makes me wonder how the DNR comes up with that estimate. You know, how do they know how many people would do this? That would be kind of a hard thing to figure out.
Madam Chair, I think the way they arrived at it was they looked at Ontario and found out that Ontario, who's had this license for decades, that about 40% of people buy it, I think was their number. And they assumed that year one, right out of the chute, that 40% of Minnesotans would buy it when I think it's probably – I know it's taken decades for Ontario to ever get to that level of participation. But I'd be awful surprised if 40% of license holders end up buying this brand new license.
Senator Torres Ray.
Madam Chair, I don't think that we should go to half. I have a theory that, you know, most of us do not catch the daily limit anyway, and we know that. So therefore, we're going to obtain this license, the cheapest, because we're not going to have the daily limit anyway. So I think that this is going to be an incentive in a way. And we have to see what happens, you know, after this amendment is adopted, is that I think that we need to track really the funding in this issue, because I think people naturally are going to try to get the more inexpensive license. Since you don't catch the limit anyway, why not? And you get, you know, half price of the license. So I think this is something that we need to probably take a look at for some years and see what happens, but I think half would be too low.
Thank you, Senator Fredrickson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm thinking about all the fishing tackle I buy during a year and all the live bait, and the amount of money I spend for the fishing license is really pretty low already in Minnesota. Since we are concerned about the Game and Fish Fund, I'm not convinced that we should offer this lower fee fishing license for a lower limit. We already have, I believe it's a single day alternative for those that are going to be here for just a short while.
Oh, Madam Chair, the whole point of the conservation license is to get people, when they buy their, purchase their license, to make a decision. To make a decision on what the limit is. And that will conserve fish. As more and more people make that decision when they purchase their license of what the limit is, it will save fish. And that's how, I think, as more people do that, you end up changing the culture of fishing, which needs to happen. Needs to happen. There's going to be, over time, more and more of us retire, more and more of us are probably going to have more time to fish than we have today. There's going to be additional pressure on the resource. So I think anything we can do to help encourage people to think about conservation when I think if we can make them think about it when they purchase their license, that's a good way to start to change the culture some.
I wonder, Senator Bach, you didn't introduce this as a bill, I believe, right? So,
well, Madam Chair, I did, and it was scheduled for a hearing in Senator Chaudhry's committee on a Friday, and I indicated to him that I had commitments up north and I couldn't be there that day. So it wasn't actually heard in the Senate, and they didn't have other committee time to schedule it. So,
do you know if hunting and fishing organizations support this or don't support it or don't have an opinion?
I don't have a copy. Oh, that's right here.
I don't know. I know I got calls from some outdoor writers after I introduced it, and to tell you the truth, I don't know what they wrote about it. I think there was probably a couple of stories written about it, but I can't say as that I read them.
Senator Dale?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I've been under the impression that the trend line is down on fishing and hunting licenses in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So I'm just challenging or questioning, is it really going to be a problem? I know we're going to have more people retiring and so forth, but is there really going to be an increase in number of fisher people that are going to be out there taking too many fish?
I think, Madam Chair, Senator Dill, I think the issue is not the number of licenses. It's the number of hours people spend on the water. And as you get more and more retirees and this whole baby boom generation moves through, someday I hope to not be here on the opening of fishing. I'd like to be fishing on the opening of fishing. And someday I'm going to do that. And a lot of people, I think, that work today don't spend as much time fishing as they might like to. But once they're retired, you often hear, I remember when my predecessor, Senator Johnson, retired, he made a very public announcement at the newspaper when they asked him, what's he going to do when he retires from the legislature? And he said, I'm going to go fishing. And I think a lot of people, when they retire, that's one of the things they hope to do is spend more time doing those kind of things. So I kind of wonder, as all these baby boomers move through, it maybe won't be that many more fisher people, but they certainly will spend more hours on the water. So I think getting them to start to think about conservation is pretty important.
All right, Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Senator Bach, I have a proposal that will allow you to still serve in the Senate and be at the fishing opening. And be with your mom on Mother's Day.
Yeah. Is that an amendment, Senator Chaudhry?
Madam Chair, you know, I think a conservation angling license is a good idea. For some of the reasons that Senator Bach said, it's also, you know, I've talked about how we desperately need to get more people into fishing. And the paradigm for how we get people, especially kids, into fishing has changed dramatically. Before it was parents, grandparents. Now we have different family structures than we had decades ago. Now we have perhaps the single mom taking their kids fishing. Perhaps we have the uncle or mentor or someone in a big brother or big sister's program taking their kid fishing. And this would have a positive impact on that aspect of fishing as well. Those kids that, people say that, I've heard it discussed that, if you're going to buy, license doesn't cost that much anyway if you're going to buy all of the fishing tackle and the lures and everything. But if you're a single mom with two or three kids, or you're an uncle volunteering your time, making it less expensive to go fishing is a big deal, particularly when you add up, $50, $60, $7,500. And in addition to that, we can have a real impact on perhaps teenager kids that maybe are kind of out on their own, but they don't have $20 to handy. I mean, they often don't have that handy. It's a big deal to a lot of kids, particularly in the inner city, who might want to go down to the river and get some fish. So I think the conservation license is a good idea. If it's the only piece of conservation we're going to do regarding fishing this session, then I would support it. I think it should be half, not two-thirds. But at the same time, I think we need to find a solution to this money issue, because we're doing the simplification. Your simplification, that's $2 million. This is an additional $2 million. If it goes to half, it'll probably be more. I agree that probably it'll end up selling more licenses. But we have the fiscal note that we have to deal with. We don't have a choice in that. So, maybe there's, you dealt with the fish house thing last year with non-residents, Senator Bach. Maybe that's an option to deal with this as well, to keep it whole. But, I like the conservation angling license idea.
Senator Bach.
All we would have to do to pay for it is take the deer license simplification out of the bill, which I would argue we don't need. And the department can't be too concerned about the health of the Game and Fish Fund, because they came with a proposal that takes $2.1 million out of the Game and Fish Fund just because they want to simplify the licenses that they offer. So we could do that, I guess, if there's concern about the fiscal cost, because I don't see that simplification of the deer license is worth $2.1 million a year. But this, yes.
I see the folks from the Deer Hunters are here, and I don't want to bring them up to testify. I know what they're going to say. I'm guessing that, I can't speak for them, but we know that their concern is they're already over-subsidizing the Game and Fish Fund, and this would exacerbate that problem by taking away fishing licenses, and as opposed to the deer bill. But I also agree with you, Senator Chaudhry. I like the idea of increasing access to people who are new to fishing or beginners or aren't that good at it or aren't that serious about it, just want to have a little bit of fun and might be more inclined to do so if there's, a little bit of a kind of a entry-level fishing license. That's how some people might view it. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I think we better.
I think yours and Senator Chaudhry's points are very well taken. One of my first years here, I created a child's deer license, a youth deer license, and it was $5 when I put it in. And the argument was some kids don't have family members that get to go hunting, but they might get a chance to go with somebody else, to go with a neighbor or a relative. And making that as least expensive as you can is a good thing. And Commissioner Sando at the time came in my office and shut the door, and boy, he was not happy about that. And went so far as to tell me, the meat on a deer is worth $100. Why would we give it away for $5? And nobody in the department today, I don't think, is saying that youth deer license wasn't a good idea. And it really isn't any different for fishing. A 16-year-old kid has to have a fishing license. And if he has a chance to go up to some friend's cabin for the weekend, it will make it easier for him if they can buy a license that costs a little bit less money. And he might get hooked on fishing and buy fishing licenses the rest of his life. And if he does, or she does, that was a pretty good investment for us to try and make it as affordable as you can for young people to go out and get the experience in the outdoors.
Okay. Senator Dill.
Well, Madam Chair, members, as we sit in other meetings this session trying to figure out how to close a $935 million budget gap, it seems a little strange to be sitting in this committee now talking about spending $2 million on another program to reduce the license on fishing licenses, at least reducing the fee. And also, I didn't know about this deer hunting simplification thing, if that's costing $2 million also. we could solve 0.4% of the budget crises right here by not doing those two things.
Well, Senator Dill, you're right, except this is the Game and Fish Fund, so it's really user paid, and it's not going to help the deficit or hurt the deficit. It's really separate from the deficit. So it's really, that changes how we look at these dollars, but we still need to be good stewards of this money that we collect, that our state collects from hunters and anglers. So that's an important question.
Madam Chair,
Senator Shockley,
I can, if we pass this amendment, I can commit to revisiting how we might be able to pay for Senator Bach's proposal.
Or perhaps it could be narrowed a little bit.
Maybe
that's a way to consider starting it.
But a two-year expiration.
Or a two-year expiration. See how it works. I don't know if it'll be, if it's not marketed, how much people will know about it. I don't know. I mean, it may be just that people that walk in to buy a license are going to be the only ones who know about this. And they were already going to buy one. So the question is it going to really reach new people? I don't know. 6 months. All right. Well, I think it's going to take some more discussion, but we should vote on what we've got in front of us. Members, time is slipping away. So on Senator Bach's A11 amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The motion does prevail. All right. Any more amendments on the bill? One more?
Council had one.
Okay.
I think it's a great idea. Like I would argue.
Yes. For the PCA, they're the one who would. They would have to take class.
Do you have your hand up, Senator Torres Ray?
While we were waiting, yes, Madam Chair, I just have a question that I would like to ask Senator Sadbier. I have a question from a constituent of mine, and I just couldn't respond to these questions, so I guess I need to ask it today. I don't know if this is the appropriate time or you want to go through this amendment.
Go ahead. Ask your question. Maybe we should wait. We do have the amendment. Why don't we wait? Senator Chaudhry, are you offering the A15 amendment?
Yes, and I'll have counsel explain it.
Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chair, there was an amendment, Senator Chaudhry's A10 amendment that was adopted last week, removed some language with the PCA. It said that they were supposed to develop design guidance. The thought was that that would eliminate the little over $200,000 fiscal note that was attached with this provision in the bill. According to the agency, though, they would have to, without this amendment, they would have to develop design guidance beyond what they've already designed for systems. So what this does is it limits the people who are going to be operating under a PCA license to limit their ISTS basically design or building to ones that fit within designs and design guidances that are provided by the agency. So the agency doesn't have to go beyond. Otherwise, if you go beyond what their prescriptive designs and design guidances are from the PCA, then you would need to have a soil scientist in place. So this is kind of a compromise over what was there before. Plus, it would be clear that it's only the ones that the agency has already developed. In fact, I think they've also asked, now it's not in the amendment because it was in the A10, would be to also reinstate. Now, you won't see this, but on page 3 of the bill, you'll see the words "and" on 3.6 to 3.7. You see the new language on design guidance. I think the idea is to reinstate that, even though it's in your bill. There was the A10 amendment deleted that. So for purposes of staff, it would be on the A10 amendment to delete line 1.2 from the A10 amendment. And that would reinstate what you're seeing in your bill right now, because that was deleted in an earlier amendment, the new language, and then adopt this to the bill, which would limit the people who are operating under a license from the Pollution Control Agency to doing only those things, only those prescriptive designs and design guidances that have been provided by the agency, and not go beyond those. Then, if they go beyond those, then a soil scientist would be required.
Okay. I'm looking at agency representatives, you're okay with this? Yeah, good. A thumbs up. All right, I think it's a good improvement. to the language. Senator Chaudhry, do you want to move the A15 amendment?
I'll move that.
And include the other piece incorporated from the A10 amendment. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. All right. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question related to Article 4, which is state lands. And it is the understanding of some people that when we introduce the language here on page 64 and on state aquatic management areas, there is some doubt or at least some questioning around the allowing ATVs to cross trout streams on the North Shore State Trail. And so I couldn't respond to the question as to what, how this will, if this will, this particular language will affect the close designation of the North Shore State Trail. I don't know, Senator Chaudhry, if you could assure, I think people are very concerned about that, and they would like to make sure that we actually know that, and that by adopting this provision, we don't pass language that will interfere with that particular close designation. But I don't know if this is the case. It seems to me that the concern is a valid concern.
Is that Senator Sachs? Yeah. Senator Sachs, was this your bill?
Senator Scogin.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Torres Ray, you take a look at where this new language is being inserted. It's being inserted in along with a list that includes scientific and natural areas, state wildlife management areas, and neither of those types of properties allow ATV travel on them. And so I don't think because it's placed here there is necessarily a implication that it will allow ATV access. However, I don't know if state aquatic management areas by themselves allow that access, so I'll let the DNR address the question.
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, members, so once again, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. The language before you on page 64 and 65 came as part of the department's lands bill. What we're really trying to do, you'll see it's dealing with the Outdoor Recreation Act and defining the composition of the system and allowing secondary units. What we're trying to clarify is that for, and I'll use the example that we're trying to do this for, and Senator Dill, I think, is familiar with this, in the Greenleaf State Recreation Area, we wanted to be able to access aquatic management area dollars to purchase an aquatic management area to be part of that state rec area. Because of the lake for fishing, it's undeveloped. We wanted to protect those rare natural resources. And since aquatic management areas were really established after the creation of the Outdoor Recreation Act, this is just something that was never taken place, adding AMAs or aquatic management areas to be part of a secondary unit within a primary unit. So we have parks right now. You can see what we allow is the following units may be authorized wholly or partially within the state park. We can authorize a historic site, an SNA, wilderness area, wild scenic recreation trail, rest area, aquatic management area. We're adding that in each of these segments of the Outdoor Recreation Act. It's not our intention at all to allow an ATV trail within an aquatic management area. That just goes against the purpose of that unit designation completely. What we may want to do at some point would be to have a bike trail or a non-motorized trail through an AMA, since some of these areas are 80 to 100 acres that include shoreline but also include non-shoreline areas as well. So we're, with aquatic management areas, we acquire buffer areas to protect that water riparian zone as well. I have talked with people who have been concerned about this language and expressed to them that it's not any intention, way, shape, or form to do that, to allow any type of ATV access or anything like that into an AMA. And it was just something we're trying to allow more flexibility as we're establishing or creating larger units to have different components of the Outdoor Recreation Act area, I should say, associated with that.
Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, can a county establish an ATV trail, designated or not, within an aquatic management area?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, no, they would not be able to, not without our permission.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to have a clarification, and I think that's good. All right, thank you. Is there any further discussion on the bill? All right.
Chair, thank you for your time on this bill. Move that Senate File 3385 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on
Finance.
Finance.
All right. On the motion, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Members, we're meeting on Thursday to have an informational hearing on some landfill issues related to some language that's in the House bill and in the Finance bill. And so I think members of the Senate need to be informed about it. It's just purely informational. We don't have a bill in front of us. And, of course, since we have session Thursday, you know, stay tuned for any schedule changes. But as of now, we're scheduled for Thursday at our normal committee time, or 1 o'clock, 1:30. Anyway, check your calendars. Meeting's adjourned. Yeah.